Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, still some snow showers, 32 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Haviland High Mileage Protection Motor Oil. Eastbound I-70 at Georgetown was closed this morning for about 2.5 hours because of a series of accidents. CDOT's Gene Peterson says the initial mishap on 70 slippery asphalt occurred about 8:30.
Car coming westbound at around mile marker 231, 232. That's about 3 miles east of Georgetown. Lost control, ran across a median, and ran head-on into a car coming eastbound. And that immediately was the impact point of the closure for the road.
Peterson said while others were gawking at the initial accident, others resulted. The interstate was closed from mile marker 228 to 232 until about 11 o'clock this morning. Colorado Governor Bill Owens is back from a day-long visit to Iowa. He was in Council Bluffs as one of a group of Republicans whipping up support for President Bush while Democrats caucused. Owens says third-place finisher Howard Dean's post-caucus rant really made an impression.
I know it's not your job as journalists to give advice to people in running for office, but if I should ever run again for anything, and if I should lose, have me review the audio tape and the videotape of Howard Dean. That's something to be avoided.
Owen says he figures the Democratic nomination will remain hotly contested right up through the July convention. A Colorado lawmaker wants to make sure that homes containing methamphetamine labs are properly cleaned up. Colorado Springs Representative Mark Clower hopes that House Bill 1182 will establish a statewide standard for meth lab cleanups.
What we want is a statewide standard so we know what a proper cleanup is based on scientific evidence and established by the rules and regs by the Department of Health.
Health experts say certain chemicals used to make the drug can cause health problems, especially in children. Under the bill, a certificate would be issued after an accredited cleanup was done, exempting homeowners from future lawsuits. That bill is still waiting to be heard in committee. This year's freshman class at the Air Force Academy had the lowest rate of students who quit. The Academy's class of 2007 only had a 2.5% freshman attrition rate for the fall semester. That's the lowest in a decade. This group of freshmen also had the highest grade point average in at least 20 years, scoring 2.92 on a 4-point scale. Following the Academy's sexual assault scandal, the Academy toned down parts of the school's basic training to bring it in line with Air Force training standards. Academy spokesman Johnny Whitaker says the current freshmen appear to be more motivated and more prepared than past classes. The double murder trial of Scott Peterson will be moving out of the Modesto, California area. Don Andrews reports on where it's headed.
Judge Al Duralami decided that pretrial publicity had made it impossible for Peterson to get a fair trial here in Stanislaus County. This morning he decided the trial will be moved to San Mateo County in the San Francisco Bay Area. Duralami chose that location because the courthouse there is closer and more prepared to proceed than the other choices that were on the list. The trial is still set to begin a week from today, but that could be delayed. Another hearing has been set for this Friday to see if everyone will be ready to go on Monday. Don Andrews, Modesto.
Longtime Democratic lawmaker Richard Gephardt is removing himself from the presidential race after a disappointing finish in yesterday's Iowa caucuses. The Missouri congressman indicated last night that he was pulling out, but he plans to officially announce his decision at a press conference today in St. Louis. Gephardt was a distant fourth in Iowa behind winner John Kerry, second-place finisher John Edwards, and Howard Dean, who came in third. Many of the remaining Democratic presidential hopefuls are now in New Hampshire trying to drum up support before next week's primary there. The political spotlight will shine on President Bush tonight as he delivers his State of the Union address before Congress and the nation. Bush's speech is expected to center on the war on terrorism, Iraq, and the U.S. economy. Martha Stewart is maintaining her innocence in the ImClone stock scandal. Before a federal judge in Manhattan this morning, the domestic diva responded not guilty as the five counts, which include obstruction of justice and securities fraud, were read to her. The stock markets were closed yesterday for the Martin Luther King Jr. Day observance. Today on Wall Street, stocks are mixed at last check. Dow is down 57 points, the NASDAQ up nearly 3, the S&P 500 down about 1.25. In sports, the Denver Nuggets hit the road to Utah tonight to play the Jazz. Nuggets are coming off their 88-80 win over the Miami Heat on Sunday. Milan Hayduk scored on a penalty shot just 59 seconds into overtime to give the Colorado Avalanche a 5-4 win over the Tampa Bay Lightning at the Forum last night. Hayduk also scored in the third period to tie the game at 4 and assisted on two others as Colorado won for the fifth time in six games. Avs face the Florida Panthers tomorrow night in Florida. Havoline High Mileage Protection Motor Oil is specially formulated to clean and protect engines driven over 75,000 miles. Add more life to your car with Havoline High Mileage Protection Motor Oil. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
What's all the buzz in the suburbs? Find out by subscribing to Buzz in the Burbs magazine. If you're looking for all the best places to eat, shop, travel, and have fun with the family, you'll find it in Buzz in the Burbs, the original lifestyle magazine for Denver suburbs. Buzz in the Burbs is a terrific resource with a wealth of information on fashion, food, home, travel, health, education, local events, personalities, and more. Best of all, you can get the buzz delivered right to your door. If you're not on the mailing list, call Buzz in the Burbs at 303-689-7665 or visit www.buzzintheburbs.com now to subscribe. For just over a dollar a month, you get all the buzz about your suburban community right in your mailbox every month. 40,000 active, affluent families rely on Buzz in the Burbs for great ideas on family living. For advertising information or to subscribe, call 303-689-7665 or check out the buzz on the web at www.buzzintheburbs.com. Call 303-689-7665 today.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to go to Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
All things considered, it's a pretty decent driver on the freeway system as we get started with the lunch hour rush. This report is service of Airborne Natural Cold Remedy. No accidents to talk about on the freeway system and fairly decent freeway speeds considering the fact that it is snowing and the roads are wet. Maybe the best thing to do this afternoon is keep a little extra space between you and the car in front of you in case the roads get suddenly slick. Off the freeways, a couple of problems for you. One is an accident at Broadway in Mississippi. Another one at 6th and Monaco. Both of those should be cleaned up here in the next 10 minutes or so. Got a cold symptom? Take Airborne Natural Cold Remedy. Airborne was created by a school teacher who was sick of catching colds in class. Find Airborne at Walgreens, Rite Aid, and CVS. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Pretty much a gray day today, mostly cloudy skies. We'll see some snow flurries and snow showers as well. Around an inch of accumulation, high of 36. Tonight we'll keep the scattered snow showers just through the evening and night hours, but then overnight those clouds decrease down to 14 degrees. Going to bring us sunshine for tomorrow, just a few clouds, 39. And for Thursday, temperatures finally around average. Our average, 43. Thursday's high, 44. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150, KNRC.
Cloudy, snow showers, 30 degrees now. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
Now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hello, Colorado. It's January 20th, 2004. We're just into the afternoon, and of course, you're listening to Enid Live. At least the program is Enid Live. I think you figured out that I am not Enid Goldstein. I'm not Enid Live or taped or Enid with a very bad cold. I'm T.R. Reed. I'm a local Denver reporter, and I'm filling in for Enid today. As you loyal listeners know, Enid, while we're out here in this cold, wet snow, is basking in Venice with a group of leading Denver women. And as a result, because Enid's gone, KNRC this week has come up with an absolutely stellar list of fill-in talk show hosts to take Enid's place. Unfortunately, the stellar part starts tomorrow. Because they didn't have anybody decent for today, they had to haul me in. T.R. Reed. I've been on this show before. Maybe some of you have heard me. And tomorrow it gets good. Tomorrow we're going to have Jerome Davis taking Enid's place. And Thursday and Friday, the Style Matters women, Evelinda Irma and Judy Schwartz, who I know you've heard on the weekend, are going to be here. So if you can just stick with me for one day, it's going to get good. I promise you, it's not going to be this bad all week. Now, 100 years ago, when I was in the U.S. Navy, every morning they used to make a stand in the corridor and some guy over the PA system would shout, "Plan of the Day." And it was just another sort of Mickey Mouse military ritual that you had to go through. But it actually was quite useful. It told you what to expect and what was going to happen. If they announced in the plan of the day that there was going to be a missile drill at 4 p.m., then when the missile buzzer ran at 4 p.m., you knew it really wasn't the Russians shooting at you. It was just a drill. That helped a lot to know. So today I'm going to tell you the plan of the day for the Enid Goldstein, or perhaps we should say the T.R. Reid show for January 20th. Yesterday, of course, was the Iowa caucuses, the beginning of this quadrennial spectacular in America where ordinary people, you and me, ordinary working people, pick the most powerful man in the world. And this is really, if you think about the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primary, and the general election coming up on November 2nd of this year, this is a phenomenal event. It's very rare in the world. Fewer than half the people on our planet get to choose their leader, and even in a lot of the countries where they do get to choose the leader, the choice is kind of preordained beforehand. It's not in our country. We're the richest, strongest, most powerful country in the world, and we're the freest, too. And we get to pick the man or woman who's going to run the most powerful country in the world. And that started yesterday in Iowa. Personally, I think Iowa is a great place to start this process. I have covered the Iowa caucuses several times. I worked for the Washington Post newspaper. I covered this year. I spent about 3 weeks in Iowa this year covering the race. And I think it's a wonderful place. You know, if you have nine Democratic contenders who want to be the person to stand up against George W. Bush in the fall, and somebody has to winnow that list down. Somebody has to choose among the nine and get it down to a number that we can pay attention to and understand. If you had to delegate that job to anybody in America, I think the people of Iowa are the best. They really take the job seriously. They care about it. They study candidates. They study issues. I was there in an incredibly cold day in Iowa in mid-December, traveling around with Howard Dean. And in Winterset, Iowa, which incidentally is the hometown of John Wayne, that's Winterset's big claim to fame. In John Wayne's hometown, Howard Dean stood up and gave a speech. He didn't even mention John Wayne, which was amazing to me. And I was talking to people in the back of the room because I've heard this speech 100 times. Why did you pick Dean to be your candidate? And this one gentleman from Madison County said to me, well, let's see. I walked the state fairgrounds with Dick Gephardt. John Edwards came over for dinner. John Kerry had me and my wife over for dinner. And Kucinich calls me about every 3 days. So I studied him pretty carefully. But when Howard came over to the house and laid out his plan, I was convinced. Now, here is a fella who has really studied politics and made a careful choice of his vote. Of course, that was 3 weeks ago. It'd be interesting to know if he ended up voting for Dean, because we know that a lot of Dean's support melted away in the warm temperatures of last weekend. To talk about we're going to begin by talking about the Iowa caucuses. What went right? What went wrong? Why the pundits were virtually all wrong? It's amazing how wrong the geniuses were this year, although they often are. Next, we're going to move on to the future of the Democratic presidential race. We're going to try to figure out how and when and who is going to emerge from the Democratic competition. And then we'll look ahead at tonight's big political news, January 20th. It's the President Bush's fourth State of the Union address, I'm sorry. And these can be bombshells. Remember, it was 2 years ago that George W. Bush announced that three countries amounted to an axis of evil, and this caused huge repercussions around the world. A year ago, George W. Bush told us he was going to go to war against Saddam Hussein, and sure enough, he did. So who knows what bomb he's going to drop this time. So we'll be talking about that. And then at 2 o'clock, for the last hour of the show, we are going to move on to a slightly different topic. We're going to talk about the most angst-ridden, pressured, sleep-deprived, nail-biting, nervous people in America. You think that's the Democratic presidential candidates? No. I'm talking about high school seniors and their parents who are involved in this incredibly nerve-wracking, difficult, gamey competition to get into the selective colleges, the 50 selective colleges that turn down people who apply. This is an incredibly difficult, complicated process. It's quite controversial. There are a lot of problems with it. Ask anybody who's either gone through it or had a child gone through it in recent years. And we're lucky in that we're going to have the chance to talk about it with America's leading expert on the college admissions game, Jay Matthews, the author of a wonderful book, which I really recommend to you if you're looking anywhere near this process. The name of Jay's book is Harvard Schmarvard, And the argument is you don't have to go to Harvard. There are a lot of other good colleges out there. But if you really want to go to Harvard or Yale, Jay helps you figure that out, too. And he's going to be on our show from 2 to 3 this afternoon to talk about those people. But first, as I said, we're going to talk politics. We're going to talk about the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primary, and future primaries. And to do that, we have a real expert in the studio. We're quite lucky, probably the most connected Democrat in all of Denver, a guy who's worked in lots of campaigns and knows everybody and knows what's going on in politics, and that's Denver political activist Terry Snyder. Hello, Terry.
Thanks, TR, for having me.
We're delighted to have you here. So, Terry, as of, let's be honest here, as of Sunday, did you see the result in Iowa? Did you figure out Kerry was going to win it?
Seemed like all the momentum was going Kerry's way, and the other dynamic in that race, you know, the turnout was so phenomenal that I think Dean may have made his projections in terms of total delegates, people that showed up, but in terms of the others turned out so many more than expected that totally changed the dynamic of that race. All the momentum was going for Kerry, and the Edwards phenomenon, and when you look at the raw numbers, it's basically a race smaller than a Democratic primary in the city and county of Denver. So everybody had the opportunity to meet, as the story you relate. Each candidate, Kerry and Edwards, are both men of remarkable charm, and that turned the tide because they developed events that played to their strengths, and that was a key to their turning the momentum around.
You know, when I was there in mid-December, traveling around with Dean. Dean was a comet streaking across the political sky. He was unstoppable. He was 10 points ahead in the polls, and his events were the biggest. And it's amazing how quickly it fell apart for him. What do you think happened?
Well, I think sometimes in politics you have too much money. Those nightly tracking polls, it seemed to me that their strategy was changing almost daily. The other dynamic is that he never defined himself as a candidate other than as a protest candidate. He never had the types of spots that he has a remarkable story to tell. Going to medical school in the Bronx, practicing medicine in low-income areas. He's got an interesting story to tell, and he never told that story. And sometimes the natural inclination is you do tracking polls, and it shows that, somebody's gaining on you. There's this sort of Mandarin class of political consultants, so their immediate reaction is let's attack, as opposed to say perhaps maybe we want to bump up our positives as opposed to simply going negative. And the negative stuff, at the end of the day, he and Gebhardt knocked each other out.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. And I saw Joe Trippi. Do you know Joe? He's an old pal of mine, a wonderful guy, smart guy, and he has lost a couple. Well, every Democratic consultant has lost a few races. Joe has lost a few, and the only candidate he could get this year was this unknown governor of Vermont, Howard Dean, and he helped carry Howard Dean right to the front. And I saw Joe saying the big mistake was getting down in the trenches with Gephardt. Gephardt came at them negatively, and, you know, it's true. Dr. Dean has a temper.
Yeah.
And he let his temper get the better of him and got carried away and fired back. Meanwhile, Kerry was not involved in the negativity very much, and John Edwards, from day one, the senator from North Carolina, ran a campaign based on I'm not going to attack a fellow Democrat. And, you know, Iowa is a nice place. People went for going positive.
Yeah, and you look at this idea that Dean's folks tried to paint John Kerry, whose whole career in politics basically got started in the anti-war movement in Vietnam, as a pro-war candidate. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with having overnight polling constantly. There's just no credibility in that kind of an attack. And the other thing, frankly, you compare the precinct operation that Dean had. I think sometimes some of his volunteers were a bit insufferable and a little smarmy. And at the end of the day, they didn't deliver the numbers. Given the thousands of folks that moved to Iowa to work full-time for Dean, there were a number of precincts where they didn't even deliver 15%.
Yeah.
So numbers do not an organization make. They did not. It wasn't like the cleanup for Gene where there was a regimented, or even McGovern in 72 in New Hampshire, where you had a regimented group that were organized and stuck to the program and delivered the results that had to be delivered.
Yeah, well, I think the volunteers were fine. I mean, they were young, energetic people knocking door to door. You couldn't dislike them. I think the problem was the candidate. The people of Iowa figured out that he was a fairly angry and sometimes nasty guy, and that's a nice state where they play politics decently. We're going to come back in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk about the other losers in Iowa. Howard Dean was clearly a loser, but who else lost big in Iowa? We'll take up that topic when we come back.
Don't settle for half the talk. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNIC.
Work for someone you love. You. Are you looking for a satisfying career helping others? Join the trillion-dollar wellness revolution by becoming a body-mind specialist. You can become a psychotherapist and a hypnotherapist and open your private practice upon graduation from Day of Miracles School. Your training is unique, spiritual, fun, and comprehensive. Sharpen your own awareness, listening, and communication skills. Take the weekend training to learn the psychology of the subconscious mind. The subconscious directly accesses the body, mind connection, and inner wisdom. Hypnotherapy is effective for smoking cessation, reducing stress and anxiety, releasing past traumas, creating better relationships, and much more. The dynamic training teaches you innovative skills of interactive hypnotherapy. Day of Miracles School is a licensed occupational school, and you're invited to call 303-777-2555. Classes begin February and September. Please mention KNRC to receive a tuition discount and CD about the program. Call 303-777-2555.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. We have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
Talk to Greg Dobbs.
Okay, here's real justice. Unmitigated, genuine, obvious, don't argue with me justice. This guy in Tucson yesterday goes up to a Salvation Army setup, and the woman who is volunteering is in a wheelchair herself. She has cerebral palsy. She's 60 years old. This guy comes up, grabs the pot. She struggles with him. He runs with the pot, crosses the street, gets hit by a car.
There is justice out there.
Boy, yes.
Greg Dobbs, weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 1150 KNIC. And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNIC.
Hi, everybody. It's the Enid Goldstein Show, but as you remember, it's not Enid Goldstein this week. It's TRE today, and tomorrow we start with the really good talk show host. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses. We're talking about winners and losers and where we go from here. We'd love to hear what you thought about the result and whether you saw it coming and whether you think Howard Dean still has a political life or it's over. Give us a call at AM 1150 KNRC, 303-382-1150. That's 303-382-1150. Give us a call and we'll talk about it. Now, I want to talk about the losers in Iowa. I think Howard Dean is clearly a loser. I have to say that Sue Leonard, this smart young woman who was his press secretary in Iowa, came up with the classic looking for the bright side line yesterday when she was approached after the results were in and her guy had run a weak third. She said, well, I'm delighted to see we're in the top tier of candidates. We're in the top three, after all. This is like this movie where Rodney Dangerfield's son goes to college and says, Dad, I'm doing terrible. I'm getting all C's. And the dad says, oh, well, A, B, C, they're all alike, you know, kind of thing. So see, Howard Dean got a C result, but, hey, he's in the top three. That's okay. Let's talk about some other losers. I think another big loser was Tom Harkin, the popular Democratic senator from Iowa. Every Democratic candidate, including his Senate colleagues, John Edwards and John Kerry, pleaded with Harkin for an endorsement. And he went with Howard Dean.
Yeah, it struck me that a lot of people jumped on the Dean bandwagon but didn't deliver anything to that bandwagon. And that's probably on both the national and the local level. Endorsements are overstated. On the other hand, I think Teddy Kennedy clearly benefited Kerry a great deal down the stretch, even to the point of going to caucuses late yesterday afternoon to rally the troops. So Ted Kennedy's support and work, you know, not just the endorsement, but stumping the state, I think was a huge factor for Kerry. And also, I think, built up some of Kerry's liberal bona fides with that key constituency in Iowa.
Yeah, I think liberal Democrats around the country, and particularly in Iowa, really love Ted Kennedy. He's irresistible, and I think the fact that they now know he's never going to be president makes him more attractive to them. I think in Iowa particularly, if you remember when Kennedy ran against incumbent President Jimmy Carter in 1980, the Iowans crunched him. They basically sent him back to Massachusetts with his tail between his legs. I think they've always felt guilty about that. They've always felt that was wrong, and so they like him today.
I think you're right. And one number that stuck out in when I looked at the exit numbers, that 23% of the people that attended were from labor union households. And I bet you, my guess is that a significant percentage of those labor households followed Teddy's lead and did not support the candidates endorsed by their unions, but voted otherwise. You know, when you look at 29% of the vote for the union-endorsed candidates, Gebhardt and Dean, versus 23% of labor did their job and turned out their members. It's just they didn't seem to vote the way they were expected to vote.
I'm now going to talk about another big loser from yesterday's Iowa caucuses. If you disagree with me, give us a call at 303-382-1150 and let me hear it. But I think another big loser in yesterday's caucuses was a fellow named George W. Bush. And the reason I make this argument is I think the choice of Kerry and Edwards as opposed to Dean suggests that what these people were voting for, they were not voting to send a message. They were voting to elect a president. And they thought that Dean might not be the guy who could beat George W. Bush. I think they went for electability, and they arguably did pick a more likely candidate, certainly a guy. It's going to be hard for George W. Bush to go after John Kerry on national security grounds. Kerry's great line, which he said every time I ever saw him in Iowa, was, I just want to remind President Bush that I know something about aircraft carriers for real. And that's true. While George W. Bush was skipping meetings of the Texas Air National Guard, Kerry was risking his life flying off carriers in the Vietnam War. So I think the message there, and I bet the same message, what do you think, Terry, in the other primary states will be Democrats, at least, are looking for somebody they think can beat Bush.
And that's really unusual. Going back, that argument's always made, and Democratic voters tend to reject it. This is the first time I could ever recall electability carrying the day in a Democratic-type event. And it's clear now that unless Dean rebounds and wins New Hampshire, he's simply becomes a fringe candidate in all of this.
Yeah, for all his money and all his support, and you got to give him points for creating that internet campaign and bringing in more money than any Democrat in history. He invented that.
But that being said, if he doesn't win New Hampshire, I do not see any scenario where he can win the nomination. However, I can see a scenario where he comes to the convention with 20 to 25% of the delegates and can be a factor in party in platform deliberations and maybe a factor even in the selection of the nominee.
Yeah, and then he gets Secretary of Health and Welfare in a Democratic administration, and maybe that's the best Howard Dean could have hoped for. But I think if you look at Dean starting at asterisk level, less than 1% a year ago, and you know, coming up to be the leader 3 weeks before Iowa, that third place finish has got to be bitter tea for him today.
It really must be.
Terry, I want to suggest one more loser to you and see if you agree with me. I think another loser in the Iowa caucuses was General Wesley Clark. The reason I argue that is he has been running strong. He skipped Iowa. He's a candidate for president on the Democratic side. Skipped Iowa and has been running very hard in New Hampshire against Howard Dean. And he too brings the national security military experience coin to the table, it's a lot tougher for Wes Clark to take on John Kerry. What do you think?
Definitely true, and the tracking polls overnight in New Hampshire bear that out.
What did you see? What do they say?
23% for Dean, 20% for Kerry, 15% for General Clark. So he seems to be dropping. Kerry had been surging even before Iowa, and so that could be, you know, one possible scenario is if Kerry wins, comes back and wins New Hampshire and pulls an upset in, say, Missouri or South Carolina, he could run the table and be the presumptive nominee very quickly. And that's one very likely scenario. Another scenario would be that if General Clark is able to hold on and you win a couple of states on February 3rd, you know, this could be a long race. It could be probably the most fun we've had in a Democratic presidential selection process since probably 1972.
You know, Terry, I'm a political reporter. I really like the race. We all like the horse race. And I've said that every year. Boy, this one's going to go all the way to the convention. They never do. And I have a feeling that somebody's going to get big momentum here and run away with it. I think another reason that I feel Wes Clark was a loser is if John Kerry is the nominee, that dashes Wes Clark's hope of being vice president. If he thought maybe he would be somebody's running mate, he would have been a perfect running mate for Howard Dean or John Edwards. But Kerry doesn't need an ex-general. Kerry's a war hero himself.
Well, the most likely scenario is always that somebody's going to run the table. But this dynamic is so different. I mean, Clark raised $11 million to $15 million to Dean last quarter. I think at the at least you're going to have a race to cover through March 2nd with the California, New York, and a bunch of other primaries picking 1,151 delegates that day. And it may even go on to a week later, March 9th, where you got Texas and the four southern state primaries. And, you know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Now, look, I'm such a neophyte at this business, I don't even know how to take. Do we have a phone call? Is that correct? And I'm going to push the button here. Let's see if this works, folks. Miracle of telecommunications. Hi, you're on KNRC.
Hi, I think what last night means is that Dean is definitely not going to be the nominee, and that his momentum that he had built was really based on anger at Bush, and that that's not going to carry the day. And I'm predicting basically that senator from North Carolina is going to wind up with the nomination because he's charismatic. He's middle of the road, and he's attractive. And John Kerry is about as charismatic as Al Gore, and he's not going to win against Bush.
It's a very interesting thesis.
It's kind of interesting. I would have agreed with you 100% probably 2 weeks ago, but it seems that Kerry's changed his haircut just a bit, and I've never seen him look so good. He sounded presidential last night on TV and looked very good the last 2 weeks.
What'd you think, caller? Have you seen this change in John Kerry?
No, I listen much more to talk radio and shun TV news. But I've seen him, and I also think he's maybe just too deep of a thinker. He had a cover story last issue in the Atlantic Monthly.
Yes, I read that. Yeah.
I think there's just too much hand-wringing. He might be a decorated war veteran, but there's too much hand-wringing over going to war, and I think that's ultimately going to hurt him with Bush, and I think that's a weakness with him against Bush. I think that Bush can say, well, wait a second, the Vietnam War is different than the war in Iraq, and I think that's a weakness for him.
What do you think of General Clark's chances?
I think he's toast.
Yeah, he's not going to make it.
He's a really interesting person and maybe a great choice for vice president, but I have seen some coverage of him, and his Argyle sweaters just are not going to carry the day.
I will say this, though, some playing a little insider. The person doing General Clark's TV is Joe Slade White, who did Ben Nighthorse Campbell's when he was a Democrat
right.
in this state.
I remember that.
Also did Don Bain's.
That was back when Wes Clark was a Republican, I believe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and I think his TV is far and away the best of the presidential candidates. And I think in no small part that's one of the reasons why he surged in New Hampshire. And mechanics of a campaign, I think, are going to play a part down the stretch here. Who can go national? Who's got the money to compete in all these different battlegrounds? For example, February 3rd, you have to compete in Arizona, Delaware, Missouri, New Mexico, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and South Carolina. That's a big battleground, and that's the press is going to be focusing on. You know, it could be a split verdict that day. If one person runs the table that day, they'll be the presumptive nominee. But if there's a split verdict, it could go on a while.
Caller, do you think any of these candidates can win your vote against George W. Bush?
Oh, I'm not voting for Bush for sure, but I was not going to vote for Howard Dean for certain because he doesn't represent, he's just way too far left, way too far left. I mean, I'm all for health care, for example, for everyone, but I'm not for single payer, so I'm for competition. And that's exactly where he is way over on the left.
Got it.
And I actually supported the war before we figured out that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and now I just think the best thing to do is to stay the course and then get out of there.
Yeah.
And I just have such a different take on it. So, again, when I look at it, I think Kerry would be decent, and I think that I think Edwards actually has the best chance of winning, again, because of his charisma. And because he actually has less experience than Kerry, and because he hasn't basically bitched about the president as much.
All right, last question. You want to see George W. Bush defeated, but what's your prediction? Will he win or lose in November?
Boy, I think if Edwards is the nominee, there's a 50-50 chance he'll lose. But I think if anyone else is elected or is nominated, it's going to be Bush easily.
Got it. Okay, there's a prediction. We're marking you down. We're going to hold you to that one now. November 2nd, call back, tell us if you were right.
Okay,
November 3rd.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. We'll be back shortly, but we're going to take a break for KNRC News with Tim McLaughlin.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, snow showers, 32 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the network of 17 John Elway AutoNation showrooms. Eastbound I-70 just east of Georgetown reopened about 11 o'clock this morning after being closed for about 2.5 hours. One car crossed the median from the westbound lane, struck a car on the eastbound side. Drivers gawking at that initial accident then caused a series of other accidents. Next month, RTD may annex the Park Meadows Mall, adding it to the area that it's already getting to go into the Lone Tree area, thanks to voters there saying they want RTD service. At present, the tax at Park Meadows is 4%, but with the RTD sales tax additions, it could go up to 4.6%. Tentative approval has come from state legislators to let young people who are enrolled in cooking schools able to swirl, sniff, and even sip wine. All they have to do is promise to spit it out afterwards. The Senate Business Affairs and Labor Committee has given the tentative approval to that measure. In sports, the Denver Nuggets head into Utah tonight to play the Jazz. Nuggets beat the Jazz when the two teams last met earlier this month. At John Elway Showrooms, you get a certified used vehicle with a 99-day warranty and a money-back guarantee. There are no worries at all when you get a John Elway certified used vehicle. Honest. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1237.
Warm up your winter with a roof-raising celebration of the music and times of electrifying jazz legend Alberta Hunter, told in the Key of Blues. The new Denver Civic Theater at 721 Santa Fe Drive presents a loving tribute to an icon of the blues, legendary songstress Alberta Hunter, whose international career spans a century. Cooking at the Cookery played to record-breaking crowds throughout the country, including Phoenix, New York, and Chicago. Critics agree the show is red-hot, astonishing, electrifying, delicious entertainment. Cooking at the Cookery, set in 1977, is written, directed, and choreographed by Marion J. Caffey. It stars Tony nominee Ernestine Jackson and Janice Lorraine, who impersonates Hunter with sass, energy, and musical savvy, said Donald Lyons of the New York Post. Tickets just $40, Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m., weekend matinees at 3 p.m., Sunday at 7 p.m. Special $30 price on Wednesdays. On sale at Ticket West Outlets, King Supers, by calling 866-464-2626 or at www.denvercivic.com.
KNRC News Time is 12:38. Time to go to Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Just cleaning up an injury accident at 52nd and Vasquez there in North Denver. Watch for some emergency equipment still on the scene. Freeway traffic moving along in pretty good shape, all things considered, this afternoon with the snow showers and the wet road conditions. This report brought to you by Taco Bell. Maybe the best advice for the rest of the day is to allow a little extra space between you and the car in front of you, just in case the roads are slicker than they appear. Another off-freeway problem for you, surface street type thing,
injury accident, 13th and Logan. Police and emergency equipment on the scene there. Savory, satisfying, and just 99 cents plus tax. For a limited time at participating Taco Bell locations, try the new cheesy bean and rice burrito with three real cheeses. When you want quality, think outside the bun. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Pretty much a gray day today. Mostly cloudy skies. We'll see some snow flurries and snow showers as well. Around an inch of accumulation, high of 36. Tonight we'll keep the scattered snow showers just through the evening and night hours, but then overnight those clouds decrease down to 14 degrees. Going to bring us sunshine for tomorrow, just a few clouds, 39. And for Thursday, temperatures finally around average. Our average, 43. Thursday's high, 44. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Cloudy skies with some scattered snow showers now, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1240. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We co-host Style Matters Live. It's the new year. How about a new you?
Aspen Grove, the fabulous open-air shopping center located at Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton, is sponsoring the new year. New You Makeover for one lucky man or woman or a couple. Winners will receive new hairstyles from Avalon Day Spa, makeup by the professionals at Origins, and a dinner for two on Valentine's Day for your reveal.
And that's not all. Each winner will receive a $1,000 shopping spree at Aspen Grove.
To enter, write 50 words or less on why you deserve this makeover. Include your photo. Drop this off at the Aspen Grove Management Office or the J. Crew Store.
Aspen Grove at Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton is open Mondays through Saturdays 10 to 9 and Sundays 11 to 6. Call them at 303-794-0640. 303-794-0640. Experience shopping in a whole new light. Sunshine.
No purchase necessary. Employees and family members of KNRC and Aspen Grove Management are ineligible. Qualifiers will be chosen at random. Entries must be received by February 6th at the Aspen Grove Management Office or Aspen Grove J. Crew Store. For complete rules, stop by the Aspen Grove Management Office.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street is being dogged today by losses in blue-chip stocks, even after five of the Dow 30 reported better-than-expected earnings. Right now, the Dow is down 58 points. S&P 500 losing 1.5, but the NASDAQ is up almost 2 points. Traders getting their first chance to weigh in on actions at Hollinger International over the weekend. Shares of Hollinger down 7 cents after the publisher of the Chicago Sun-Times and London Daily Telegraph kicked out its chairman, Conrad Black, Saturday. Black is embroiled in a scandal involving millions of dollars in unauthorized payments to former company execs. The voters, except in Iowa, have not had their say on who should represent the Democratic Party for the presidential election this year. But following the Iowa caucus, two markets that trade candidates' futures, including one run every election cycle by the University of Iowa, place Kerry as the nominee. He registers a 35% chance of taking the nomination, passing Howard Dean, who slipped from 50% Saturday to 24%. I'm Andrew O'Day in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Closes your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show. Unfortunately, without Enid today, Enid's in Italy, and T.R. Reid is here. Filling in, we're talking about yesterday's Iowa caucuses and the future of the Democratic race. And we want to talk to a voter and a listener, John, who's very kindly waited for quite some time. John? Hello.
Good day.
Hi, how are you? So what'd you think about Iowa?
Well, I thought it was extremely a good thing to happen for the Democratic Party. The reason I think it was good is because this election is far from being assured for any candidate. And I think what it made individuals do is really start focusing in on the real issues and start looking at what it's going to take to convince the American public that the Democratic Party's choice is one that is better than the individual that's in office right now. And I think the first question that's going to be asked is, are we better off now than we were when G.W. Bush went into office?
What's your answer?
And of course not. And I think what's going to happen is that the, I call them Gene Republicans with Stepford Wives. That's my take. When they start seeing that their pocketbook is being affected by the individual that's holding office, and we only have to look as far as time and a half. We only have to look as far as VA benefits. They've lost time and a half. Veterans of our country, their benefits are being cut by $1.8 billion. When we take a look at the
we're spending a lot of money for veterans of Iraq's army. Yeah. We're giving them a lot of money. Doesn't that make you feel any better?
No, my son is in the 82nd Airborne Division, and
where is he?
He's right now at Fort Bragg. He was at in Afghanistan.
Wow.
And what he's making is a little over poverty level.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm not going to hoopla for George Bush on that. What I think has to happen now is okay, we have three strong individuals, all of whom have different takes on the war.
And these three are?
Kerry, Edwards, and Dean.
Yes.
But you have to remember that G.W. Bush also lost there. He lost to McCain. And so this basically is just looking at one state that's mid-America, that's small city, that's farmer oriented. It's a whole different take than larger.
That's true. But if you look at the 2000 election, Iowa pretty closely reflected the national trend. Al Gore won by half of one percentage point, which is exactly what happened nationally. Caller, who you going to vote for George W. Bush? Could he still get your vote in November?
There would be no way that I could ever morally vote for somebody who is wrecking this country.
And how about your son, the soldier? What do you think he'll do?
My son, I think that he will also vote against G.W. Bush.
Which candidate would you pick to be the one to vote for? Which Democrat?
I'm going to withhold judgment, because I think what happened yesterday is wonderful. Unlike the last election, Gore, having a position of being vice president, was almost anointed.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular situation, what we're doing is we're filtering out views. And Wesley Clark may be a fourth individual who comes in there.
Yeah.
But what's nice is that those Wesley Clark's experience in foreign affairs, I mean, he was on the ground. Recently.
Yes, yeah, and Kerry has it too. All right, let me ask you my bold prediction question. Who do you think is going to win in November?
I think that George W. Bush is going to lose, and I think the reason being is that people are going to be focusing on their own pocketbooks and how the Republican Party has given favor to large corporations at detriment of middle-class America.
Got it. Yeah, we definitely heard that in Iowa from many Democrats. John, thanks so much for waiting so long. It's good talking
to you.
Thank you. Bye. The caller raises a good point. I mean, George Herbert Walker Bush came in third behind Senator Doe and Reverend Pat Robertson and went on to win the presidency. Ronald Reagan lost at 80, but they had the wherewithal to write a campaign that was troubled. If Dean has that wherewithal, all our predictions of doom today for that campaign could turn around.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about whether Iowa winners go on to the White House, just ask President Gephardt, who won very easily in 1988.
But the caveat with that is that they have to have the wherewithal and the strength to turn their campaign around and make the changes that are necessary to write it and go on to win.
Yeah, and Terry Snyder, one interesting thing is that Dean has that. Dean has organizations in every primary state, and he's got money.
Yes, that's true.
His problem is he's also got a temper, and this comes through. In Iowa, Dean was at an event. It was the 14th event of the day. It's a long day, and some guy called up, and some guy in the audience stood up and started haranguing him, and Dean got mad at him. He got mad at him and said, it's my turn to speak. And this news clip was played on the Iowa TV over and over. You're not impolite to Iowa voters. You just can't do that. And I think that kind of thing really hurt him. Now, what we're going to do next is take a look ahead at the rest of the political schedule. Of course, we start in New Hampshire with seven candidates on the ballot, and then we'll try to estimate how many we think are still going to be in the race and on the ballot on the first Super Tuesday, February 3rd. The second Super Tuesday is March 2nd, and the third one is that March 9th, Terry? Is that right?
We March 2nd and then March 9th.
Yeah. I wonder if this, I think you're estimating this campaign will go to March 9th.
That's my prediction, maybe even a little longer.
Yeah, I'm betting it'll be over before then, but I can't quite say how it's going to end.
Well, Lieberman will be gone after New Hampshire is my guess. Kucinich probably as well. The question is, can Edwards or Clark pick up some of their, you know, the financial supporters of the candidates that drop out? And where does Labor go? Do they sit it out, or they go
yeah.
with Dean? Or,
yeah.
Because there was a schism within Labor.
Yeah, between Dean and Gephardt.
And basically the building and construction trades were with Gephardt, and more of the white-collar unions were with Dean. Now, that dynamic could change, and I'd be curious to see what happens there, because Labor did prove to turn out a lot of people in the caucuses. They just didn't all vote.
Yeah, they didn't vote the way they were. Thanks, Terry. I know we have some callers waiting. I'm sorry. We're just going to take a very short break. I'm Tom Reed, filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Some people prefer the right wing. Some prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapaho Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy. Sell quality products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Napoleon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Napoleon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
Hi, folks, this is Larry King. Do you feel like you're missing out on the potential health benefits of the French paradox because you don't drink red wine every day? Well, it turns out that you may get many of the same benefits from Welch's 100% grape juice. That's because purple grape juice contains powerful antioxidants like the ones found in red wine. What's more, Welch's purple grape juice is fat-free, cholesterol-free, and certified by the American Heart Association. So forget the corkscrew. Twist open a bottle of Welch's purple grape juice and then drink to your health.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Have you been considering adoption? There are numerous children in Adams County who need adoptive families. Make a child's dream come true in the new year and foster or adopt a child from Adams County. You do not need to live in Adams County to participate. Call them now at 303-412-5151. That's 303-412-5151. Make your New Year's resolution to fulfill a child's dream and be an adoptive parent for Adams County.
When you're looking to buy or sell a home, look for the name that brings results, RE/MAX. There's a RE/MAX real estate office near you, so call them today. RE/MAX, outstanding agents, outstanding results.
Hi, this is Dominic Barasha.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Listen to Dominic and Bill live this week from 6 to 9 p.m.
And you could win tickets to the hot new show at the Denver Civic Theater, Cookin' at the Cookery.
It's the story of blues legend Alberta Hunter and her comeback show in Greenwich Village at the age of 82.
It's a rousing, raunchy, sexy celebration of a great American songstress and the life she led.
And you can see Cookin' at the Cookery for free just by listening to Dominic and Bill live all this week on AM 1150 KNRC.
You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to the Enid Goldstein Show, but you're not listening to Enid today. She's on vacation. It's T.R. Reid filling in. And we're talking about what happened in Iowa yesterday and what's going to happen in the rest of the Democratic race. We have a caller. Jeff has been waiting very kindly. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine, thanks. So what'd you think?
Well, I don't think anybody who knows politics well, you know, just elementary level would have thought that Dean was going to take the Dole position. I mean, he just wasn't. He was a way to fester the base and say things that the legitimate candidates in the end weren't going to say, but at least get him out on the table, you know, go that adamantly against Bush. And then people like Kerry and Lieberman will wash their hands of him. I think Lieberman already has washed his hands of him, actually.
Yeah, clearly.
That was done. But Kerry's been feisty, but not to that level. And yet he can stand, you know, and look over at all of that hate speech and all of that anger and all of that, you know, extreme left base festering and not necessarily use it but benefit from it because the base is festered.
So you're saying Dean provides a service for these guys. He gets the Democrats riled up.
Sure.
And then Kerry or somebody can go into the general election and not have been the man.
And I don't think he knows what kind of tool he was. And I, by comparison, I think Bradley did. I think Bradley was the same tool. I don't think that Bradley was a divisive tool like Dean is. I think he was more of a spark interest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you.
Over here at our party, because I mean. He was campaigning in Washington State, you know, when Gore was in Iowa. It's like, what are you doing, you know? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
I think Terry Snyder, our Denver political expert, is agreeing with you. Was that Bradley's role, do you think?
Well, I think Bradley was, you know, one of those campaigns that just never caught fire. And, you know, he had an interesting message but got out-organized. But I think, you know, the point was made earlier that the big loser yesterday was George W. Bush. Because the participation of average Democrats, the sheer number of volunteers and people working, we haven't seen those kind of numbers in a long, long time. And a certain percentage will not be involved in the general, but a very large percentage of those backing one candidate or the other will ultimately be there to work and do the kind of grunt work that's required to get somebody elected in November. And so I do think that in a very real sense that the Democrats are coming together and are going to be better united and organized come November to defeat George Bush.
You know,
the way I see this
yes.
happening, and this is the same way that happened with McCain and Bush, it's part of the bigger politic, and I've seen it happen through so many elections that it's getting tedious now. It's like everybody go, Dean, look at Dean. And it's like, it's not going to be Dean. Come on,
yeah.
guys. This is silliness. The same thing happened with McCain and Bush. It wasn't going to be McCain. I don't know how many people I know who called themselves libertarians. I agree with them most of the time, but they just seem to hate the R. They don't like to be called a Republican. It's dirty to them or something. So they don't want to join the movement and be part of the two-party system.
Well, I noticed that Cato Institute in Washington has been trashing George W. Bush.
Sure.
That's
well,
the libertarian think tank.
I mean, Bill Kristol.
Yeah.
When was the last time you heard Bill Kristol come out and support the president vehemently? He doesn't. He didn't in 1999.
The
Weekly Standard has been up Bush's butt since before he was nominated. They
yeah.
wanted somebody other than Daddy Bush because they didn't think he could win the election. And to this day, some people say he didn't. But it's not going to be somebody like Edwards. If Edwards has a position, it's going to be secondary to somebody like Lieberman, you know, make him look more pleasant, or secondary to Kerry. For the same reason, but then that's a palatable ballot. You've got kind of the nice little boyish-looking guy, you know, good-looking family. But then you got
Jeff, do you have a candidate in this race? You have a preference?
I began campaigning for Bush 18 months before he was elected. So.
Oh, sorry, for George W.
Correct.
So and you're voting for him again?
Oh, of course I am. I understand party politics, and this doesn't come down to, you know, Bush might have upset me over Medicare, so I'm going to run away and go vote for, you know, the Federalist Party. I'm personally a Federalist, but not that they have a party.
Yes.
But I'm not going to run away from the party when I know in the bigger picture somebody like Kerry is going
yes.
to be night and day different than Bush. So people on my side need to realize that, and they go through this.
Yeah.
They did it in 2000 where, you know, I'm voting for Buchanan. I heard people calling up talk shows constantly. You know, the hell with Bush.
Well, Jeff, which these Democrats do you think would be the most serious challenger to your man?
I'm going to say this, and it's not arrogant. I'm sure everybody
yeah.
listening who knows me is going to say it is arrogant.
Well, I won't.
None of them. I think they are equally flawed by comparison, and I think they'll pull maybe 1 or 2%
So I gather that in answer to my horse race question, you're going to tell me who's going to win on November 2nd.
Well, on November 2nd, Bush is going to beat either Kerry, Edwards, or Lieberman. I was surprised that Gephardt stepped out, and I thought he was going to take the Dole position, move into it, and do the, you know, the statesmanly thing for his party and take the fall like Mondale did or like Dukakis did, but obviously he doesn't want any part of that.
Yeah,
so
got it.
Stepped out.
Okay, Jeff, thank you very much. Thanks for calling, and thanks for waiting. The challenge now for George W. Bush, as Jeff just said, is he's got a divided country. He ran as a unifier. But our country is badly divided, and we'll talk about that in the next hour on the Enid Goldstein Show.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, snow showers, 29 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Albertsons. Governor Bill Owens today signed the first bill of the 2004 legislative session. The legislation seeks to reform the state's failed venture capital program, or CAPCO.
This bill creates a Colorado Venture Capital Authority. Unlike current law, this bill requires that funds be used for seed and early stage businesses. Unlike current law, this bill requires 100% investment of the funds.
Senate Bill 11, which enjoys bipartisan co-sponsorship, comes on the heels of the state auditor reporting that CAPCO companies have spent nearly $500,000 on lobbying fees. In its current form, the CAPCO program gives tax credits to insurance companies that fund the program. Owen says SB 11 will protect taxpayer dollars from abuse. The Colorado State Patrol has decided not to file charges against the driver of a school bus which crashed into an SUV last Wednesday morning in Boulder County. According to doctors, the bus driver, Marion Huffman, was suffering from a medical condition when the bus ran the stop sign and hit the other vehicle. None of the six elementary school-aged children on board the bus were injured. However, four children in the SUV, ranging in age from 13 to 15, were taken to Boulder Community Hospital for treatment of minor to serious injuries. The bus driver and driver of the SUV were also transported to the hospital that day. Investigators continue to search for clues in the death of a Littleton woman Saturday night. Doctors performed an autopsy on the body of 46-year-old Rhonda Holland early this morning. Holland's body was found Sunday morning in the basement of the Seasons Giving gift shop at 5757 South Rapp in Littleton. Investigators believe robbery was the motive for the murder, but are still looking for clues to back up that theory. Holland's car was later found at a motel near Santa Fe and Bowles. One man was questioned in Holland's murder and was later arrested on unrelated warrants. Police are not calling him a suspect at this time. A dumpster behind the motel where Holland's car was found is also being searched. The Arapahoe County District Attorney also made a walkthrough of the gift shop and the motel early this morning, but investigators aren't saying what, if anything, was found. Investigators say it could be a week before final results of that autopsy are known. Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt says he's withdrawing from the Democratic presidential race.
Today, my pursuit of the presidency has reached its end. I'm withdrawing as a candidate and returning to private life.
Gephardt finished a distant fourth in last night's Iowa caucuses behind winner John Kerry, second-place finisher John Edwards, and Howard Dean, who came in third. Gephardt stressed in his remaining months in Congress he will fight for the things that he has always fought for. Massachusetts Senator John Kerry thanked his supporters for making him the comeback Kerry after winning yesterday's Iowa caucuses. He ended up with 38% of the vote after lagging in the polls early on. North Carolina Senator John Edwards also had an impressive finish, grabbing 32% of the vote. The early leader, former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, finished with only 18% of the vote in third place in those caucuses. The candidates now focusing on Tuesday's New Hampshire primary. A loud blast was heard in central Baghdad today, followed by small arms fire and sirens at the main U.S. civilian and military headquarters. The sirens sounded for only about a minute. The U.S. military has not commented. The main U.S. base in Baghdad has regularly come under attack. On Sunday, a car bombing outside the base's main gate killed at least 25 people and injured more than 100. President Bush will give his State of the Union address tonight. In it, he's expected to focus on staying the course his administration has plotted out. The message will set up his re-election bid later this year. Bush is expected to stress a commitment to national security and economic security. He also will stress his willingness to finish the mission in Iraq. Jury selection in the double murder trial of Scott Peterson could begin as early as next month. That's the word from Peterson attorney Mark Garagos, who found out today the trial will be moved to San Mateo County. Garagos says there will be no more delays and, quote, technically we will be engaged in trial as of Friday. That's when a judge is selected to hear the case. During the trial, Peterson will be held in the San Mateo Detention Center located adjacent to that courthouse. Peterson is accused of murdering his pregnant wife, Lacey, and their unborn son. On Wall Street, stocks continue mixed at this hour. The Dow is down more than 51 points. NASDAQ up just over 6. The S&P 500 down less than a point. In sports, the Denver Nuggets will be in Utah tonight to play the Jazz. Nuggets beat the Jazz earlier this month, the last time the two teams met. Nuggets are coming off their Sunday win over the Miami Heat. Don't miss Albertson's 10-cent sale going on now with Navel oranges, russet potatoes, Danshu pears, lemons, and limes, all 10 cents each. Stop by today. Albertson's, helping make your life easier. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Guys, you've probably been hearing the message about UltraCarb for a while now. And if you need to shed a few pounds, you may have even thought about calling. Well, now's the time. Fact is, there is no magic bullet for weight loss, but UltraCarb is the ultimate secret weapon for dropping those pesky pounds you can never seem to get rid of. In a recent article in a popular men's health magazine, the main ingredient in UltraCarb was quoted as extremely effective for blocking carbohydrates, the source of most weight gain. Most men don't have the time to go to the gym for 2 hours a night, and while it's important to eat right and get a little exercise, most men certainly are not going to completely give up the pizza, the beer, and the foods they love. If that's true for you, UltraCarb can help you drop the spare tire and trim the love handles and get you back into those jeans that muck you from the back of the closet. Best of all, UltraCarb is absolutely guaranteed to work or your money back. Get back the body you used to have.
Call now for your risk-free trial of UltraCarb. 1-800-451-6432. That's 1-800-451-6432. It's guaranteed. 1-800-451-6432.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to check with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Northbound I-25 in the Mousetrap. The report of some pallets on the highway there could be causing a bit of a problem, though it's not causing any sort of a problem on the Central Valley. This report of service of Subway. Rest of the freeway system moving along in pretty good shape considering the weather conditions, snow showers, sloppy roads, wet driving conditions. Maybe the best word of advice is to leave a little extra space between you and the car in front in case the roads get slippery all of a sudden. One off-freeway problem for you. It's also an obstruction in traffic on Race Street at I-70. Police trying to move a big box out of the lanes of traffic there. Start the new year by eating and feeling good at Subway. Try Subway News Atkins-friendly carb-controlled wraps. Savor the flavor of the turkey bacon melt or chicken bacon ranch Atkins-friendly wraps now at Subway. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Our scattered snow showers are going to leave behind about an inch accumulation as we head through the late afternoon and into this evening. We'll top out around 35 for the high. The snow will taper off tonight as we drop back into the mid-teens. It'll be mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the mid-30s, and then we're back in the 40s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Cloudy skies right now, snow showers in the area, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, you're back with the Enid Goldstein Show, but not with Enid Goldstein. As we've said before, I'm T.R. Reid, filling in for Enid while she is in sunny Italy and we're in slushy, snowy Denver. We can take it out on her, but meanwhile, we're here talking about politics. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses. We're talking about the future Democratic race, and we're going to talk now about what's going to happen tonight as George W. Bush tries to set the foundation for his reelection campaign in his State of the Union address. We're talking with a Denver political activist and a very, very knowledgeable political observer, Terry Snyder of Denver. But first I want to talk to a caller, Joan from Fort Collins, who's very kindly waited. Joan, sorry we kept you waiting.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I'm enjoying the program a great deal.
Good. So what'd you think about yesterday?
Well, you know, first of all, I was very surprised because I really did think Dean was going to come out stronger. But I'm not opposed to Kerry nor Edwards.
Yep.
But I do think we have a really long race ahead of us. So there's really no point in anybody getting too riled up or upset about the outcome.
So you're saying Howard Dean kind of caught your attention?
Yes, Howard Dean caught my attention. And I had a sister from Indiana who was actually went out there and campaigned for him.
Really? Really?
And, you know, the nice thing is, and I believe your guest made the comment, and this is certainly true of my sister and myself, that this man who we are to call president, and I put that in quotes, if nothing else, has really got a lot of people who normally would not participate in the election process, have really gotten us out to campaign against him.
You haven't been active in politics before, Joan? Have you been active before?
No. No, I haven't. I voted, of course.
Yes.
But I'm going to, as a matter of fact, I'm going to a meeting tomorrow to find out how I can become part of the Colorado caucus.
Oh, smart.
I'm adamantly against, you know, this man who is laughingly called president. And frankly, if you're not a rich white man or male to one, I don't know why you would vote for him.
Well, Joan, you just told it against him because he got 500,000 votes fewer than the other guy and got his way into the White House anyway. Isn't that what bugs you?
I'm sorry, say that again?
You're just mad at him because he got 500,000 fewer votes than the other guy but still somehow managed to get to the White House.
Well, you know, I don't think he was legally elected. And, you know, frankly, as an American, whether I'm a Democrat, whether I'm an independent, whether I'm a Republican, whether I'm a Federalist, I don't think anybody should be happy with how that last election came down.
Joan, do you think...
I mean, it was a farce.
Terry has a question for you, Joan.
Joan, you indicated you're going to caucus training tomorrow. Do you think that come April 13th, which is the date of the Colorado caucuses, that the Democratic nomination will still be in doubt?
Will still count?
Well,
yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Democratic nominee by April. Well, so let's say the Democratic nomination is still up for grabs on April 13th. Who do you think your candidate will be, Joan?
Wow. You know, I think it's too early. It's just too early to tell at this point. Like I said before, I'm really surprised Dean didn't get it, but Kerry is very promising.
What's most important for you? Is the thinking the person can probably beat Bush? Is that your number one consideration?
You know, I'm sorry. I'm on my cell, and you keep breaking up.
So yeah, sorry. Well, let me ask you one last question, Joan. You, like everybody else, you have to make a prediction. Who's going to win in November?
I'm hoping it's anybody but Bush.
I know you're hoping that, but what do you think?
I'm going to say, just because Kerry came out pretty strong, I'm going to say Kerry.
Got it. Hear you. Okay, thanks a lot for calling, Joan. Thanks for waiting.
You bet.
Let's take a call from Bernie. Hi, Bernie. What'd you think about the result?
It's a pleasure to hear you guys on the radio.
Good. Thank you.
I'm a surrogate for Joe Lieberman out here. I've already represented him at one of the at the Aurora event on January 10th.
Is that right? Oh. Well, you know, both Terry Snyder and I are worried about your man. We don't see much of a future for him. What do you have to say?
Well, you know what? I've been in politics for 30 years. I was a Bergen County politician in New Jersey for many years. When the Republican intense administration in that county said that they could not be beat, we beat them.
Yeah.
I don't want to count Joe Lieberman out because I think he's still a viable candidate. We have people in 20 states making phone calls to New Hampshire and sending letters to New Hampshire urging voters there to vote for Joe Lieberman. You didn't see him in Iowa. He didn't feel that Iowa was the place that he needed to campaign. And he's ahead in the polls in Oklahoma. He's rising in the polls. Admittedly, the southern states are going to be important, and that could be problematical. But with the right guy beside him. The South is not a giveaway to the Republicans.
Yeah.
Don't you forget it.
And Lieberman's very popular in Florida.
What I do is I am constantly in touch with people. And the one question that I ask people, the lady who said the pocketbook is what's going to decide the next election, when I ask people, are you better off today than you were 3 years ago, I have not gotten a single, not one person, and I don't pick my people.
Well, you don't know any billionaires.
Not one person has said that they're better off today, and they become, the umbrage just comes out.
Well, you need to ask some of these billionaires who got the $10 million tax break. They're better off.
Bernie, can I ask you a hypothetical question? I know you.
Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You're certain that Senator Lieberman is going to make a comeback in New Hampshire, and you mentioned Oklahoma on February 3rd. If hypothetically he does not do well and drops out after either January 27th or February 3rd, where do you think his supporters will go? Purely hypothetical.
I mentioned the January 10th event.
Yeah.
One additional detriment to Dean was the arrogance that trickled down from his candidacy. The guy that represented Dean at that event was arrogant. He turned everybody off.
So, but
what I think will happen is that Democrats will come together because the issue is so insurmountable of incompetency in the White House and of special interest dedication to special interests that Americans will vote their pocketbook because they don't see Medicare, they don't see drug benefits, they see the deficit spending, they see the big there are so many issues. I could debate Bush and beat him.
Got
just
it.
Just on the issues.
So what's your bet on November 2nd? Who's going to win?
I really can't tell you who will
win. Oh, come on, Bernie. Give it a shot.
A Democrat will win. It will either be Kerry or Edwards. And Kerry, I would like Lieberman to be on the ticket, too. An Edwards-Lieberman ticket would be unbeatable.
Hear you. Got it. Thanks a lot for calling, Bernie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, the next big political problem facing us here, we've heard our listeners are split on whether George Bush can win in November. But the president is basically going to start his campaign tonight on national television, giving a State of the Union address. And the kind of scuttlebutt, you know, in Washington, they call in the reporters a few days ahead and basically tell them what to look for. And to me, the interesting scuttlebutt is that I think the White House has figured out that they've got a badly divided country. This is a president who said he wanted to be a unifier. But the country is very seriously divided along partisan lines, and a lot of it is because of President Bush's character and policy. People love him or hate him. People love his policies or hate them. And we had heard that the State of the Union address was going to be the beginning of the unification march. Let's bring people together. Very interesting development happened on that. A week ago, as we all know, President Bush declared that he was going to propose a permanent station on the moon and human exploration of Mars, which the European Space Agency is already trying to do. And he thought that this zeal for adventure, this great new cosmic adventure going back to the days of 1969 through 75, would unify Americans and get them excited about him and his presidency. Terry Snyder, how did it work? Did it meet that test?
No, it became the butt of late-night jokes. I mean, Letterman, who tends to be fairly conservative, and Leno just had a field day with it. And
yeah, the question is maybe he could find Osama bin Laden on Mars.
Yeah, and it's not good to be the butt of late-night jokes. That was the beginning of the end for Jimmy Carter. And, you know, I think it's the type of bold initiative. Even John Glenn was on TV talking about how that was just, there was not adequate funding. It was just not a well-thought-out proposal. And I think perhaps he needed to look presidential as opposed to trying to come up with more catchy cliches. And I think he's very beatable.
Yeah, got it. We notice, and the thing polled terribly, and the polling since a week ago, most Americans have said they think this is a wacky plan. I don't think Americans are against space exploration, but at a time when we're looking at trillion-dollar additions to the national debt, nobody knows where the money's going to come from. And as a result, according to my newspaper, The Washington Post, and therefore it must be true, right, According to the Washington Post today, he's not even going to mention Mars and the moon in this speech today. So tonight, so everybody watch and see. The president needs to start doing something about this sharp division in the country. Now we do have a very long distant caller, I think. Somebody calling in, not from Arvada or Denver or even Boulder, but I think even further away, Venice. Is there a Venice in Colorado? Hello, Venice.
There is. Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Enid. This is, now we do have Enid live on the Enid Goldstein Show. Thank God. I think your listeners are delighted.
Delighted. And the reason I'm calling you from Venice. I'm half dead. I haven't slept in about 2 days. It is magnificent here. It's about 9 o'clock at night. We just finished dinner. And the reason I'm calling you is we haven't been able to figure out who has won the Iowa caucus. So tell me who
You're kidding, really. John Kerry won. He won 38%, and Edwards was second with 32%. Howard 38. Dean came in a very weak third at 18%.
Oh, my goodness.
Dick Gephardt did so poorly in fourth that he's now dropped out of the race. He's gone home to St. Louis and not going to fight anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
So quite an interesting result, and the result seems to be an effort by Democrats to say, let's find a guy who can win.
So does this really put a big crimp in it for Dean as far as you can see?
He better win New Hampshire or he's seriously crimped. The thing about Dean is, you know, Enid, he's got more money than anybody else. He raised more money than any Democrat in history. He's got this tremendous base of people who believe in him and his cause. And my judgment is in politics that when a guy like that loses, then that base pops in with more money. They've only given $100 apiece or $200 apiece. He can get up to $2,000 from him, so I think he can go back to that base and get more money. But
let me ask you this: how much of an indicator is the Iowa caucus? What was the percentage of Iowans who actually voted in the caucus?
Well, the turnout was 125,000, which is big. That's double what they had 4 years ago. That's a big turnout for Iowa because you know you have to stay there for 2 hours. It was a pretty impressive show for John Kerry all the way. He came on very strongly at the end, and if you look at the exit polling seems to say, we think this is the guy who can stand up to George W. Bush, and that's what Democrats want to do. They're not sending a message by their vote. They're trying to elect a president this time, and therefore my guest Terry Snyder and I have been arguing here that Bush was one of the losers yesterday because people are looking for a way to get him out of the White House.
Oh, I like your assessment.
Give me a weather report from Venice, Enid.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
Give us a weather report from Venice. What's it like?
The weather it's nippy, but it's sunny. It is, we thought it was going to be rainy and cold. It's probably in the 30s or 40s, but it's got a kind of a bone-chilling cold that goes through you. But it's sunny, and the sun is this incredible shade that I have never seen any other place in my life. It's kind of a crimson in a blue sky, and as it was going down, it looked like a fake sun.
Wow.
That the Venetians had
incredible.
Nothing else better to do but to create a fake sun to wow the tourists. But
and there's no snow?
And it's quite wonderful, huh?
No snow?
No snow.
Well,
no.
We hate you.
Was socked in yesterday, and as a result, the plane was late. But today, Frankfurt looked lovely, and Venice is gorgeous.
Enid, thanks so much for calling, even though we hate you for being in that sun when it's rainy and slushy and snowy in Denver today. We'll get our sun back tomorrow.
It's been. Thank you, TR, and thanks for holding down the fort. And Francie says hi.
Hi, Francie. Nice to talk to you. And Dana, hello. Thank
Hello.
You very much for calling us. We really appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you, TR.
Thanks.
Bye.
So that was Enid Live on the Enid Live, Enid Goldstein Show. See, I told you we could do it, and we'll be back shortly. I'm TR Reid, filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Greg Dobbs, named best radio talk show host by Westword, AM 1150 KNRC. Tomorrow on Court TV, an all-new, all-real forensic files, an ATM machine, and a couple of how-to manuals. Do they add up to suicide?
There needed to be some additional investigation done.
Or murder?
Seemed like a normal marriage.
Find out how forensic detectives unravel this twisted tale of lies and deceit.
She said, you could commit a murder
and the police were not smart enough to catch you.
Forensic Files, tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific, only on Court TV, the investigation channel.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
You got the Carlson file handy?
Yeah, it's over there on the credenza.
You mean the bookcase?
It's a credenza.
Okay, where I come from, that's a bookcase.
Dude, we grew up together.
So you claim.
Furniture, that's our thing. This week during our Office Max Business Savings event, save $50 on any furniture purchase of $350 or more. Buy one, get one free on Smead filing products and 3M Post-it notes, plus 10% off on all Office Max ink and toner. At Office Max, our thing is unbeatable savings. What's your thing?
Offer ends January 24th. See store for details.
PlayingPolitics2004.com is picking up evidence of intelligent life in the far center. These sounds, audible only to people who are reasonable and humorous about political debate, take several months to reach the unconditioned ear of demagogues on the far left and far right. But it's happening. The radical left and right are listening, but they are not amused. Unlike the Today Show, PlayingPolitics2004.com is separating the politicians from their real agendas by more than a floral arrangement. Do you want a humorous look at where Dean's really coming from? Rumsfeld's battlefield strategy, or Hillary's plans for you? What does Pat Robertson stand for and the ACLU kneel to? Or is it the other way around? These decks will tell you. Playing Politics 2004 card decks can be purchased at select Borders bookstores or at www.playingpolitics2004.com. We're doing business the old-fashioned way, legally.
Dr. Yuki hosts the exciting The Wild and Wacky World of Pets and Animals, airing live Saturdays at 2 p.m. on KNRC. The show is a zany, fast trip into the hilarious and fascinating world of animals. Learn unusual facts about the critters with which we share our world. Callers can win prizes during the Pet Trivia Challenge, and lots of fun is in store. Don't miss the fast-paced, action-packed hour of fun and hilarity with Dr. Yuki and The Wild and Wacky World of Pets and Animals, Saturdays at 2 on KNRC.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
Well, not exactly back to Enid Goldstein. Back to T.R. Reid, actually sitting in for Enid Goldstein. As we just heard, Enid is in sunny Venice where there's no snow, slush, or rain or cold like we have here today. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses. We're talking about the President's State of the Union message tonight. Let's hear from a caller, Will, in Boulder. Will, thanks so much for waiting.
Thanks thanks for having me on, gentlemen.
Sure.
Couple of things. First, I wanted to call listeners' attention to the State of the Union scorecard on Tom Paine at www.tompaine.com. It's a list of issues and facts to have handy while you're listening to the State of the Union tonight.
So spell Tom Paine for us.
T-O-M-P-A-I-N-E.
Okay.
Common sense.
Okay.
And it's a scorecard listing six issues and facts that are of importance to the country, and you get a chance to judge whether Bush acknowledges them, ignores them, or spins them in his State of the Union tonight.
Got it. What are the six?
We've got health care, jobs and economic recovery, funding education, the environment, state and federal spending, and the war on terror. And one of the things that interests me about it is that we are just already taking for granted that Bush is going to get up on stage tonight and basically lie through his teeth about all these issues. He did such a great job of lying last year's State of the Union address. We're coming to expect that. So,
you know, I heard what I thought was a funny report on Denver's Channel 7 News last night. They were preliming the State of the Union speech, and the newscaster said, "We are told the speech will be examined carefully to avoid false statements like last year's." You would hope that the State of the Union message would be examined carefully to avoid false statements. I think that's the minimal standard, isn't it?
Well, I think the first false statement is going to when they're going to say that here comes the President of the United States.
Oh, here we are.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Sure.
Do you think at the end of the day, George Bush will be reelected simply because his party volunteers and their cadre of folks, particularly the religious right, are going to work a whole lot harder, going to be a lot better organized? Or do you think the Democrats can match them in terms of hard work and effort?
I think the Democrats let me put it this way. I think the Democratic nominee will have more votes in November than will George Bush, but that's no guarantee.
That's what happened last time, and look what happened.
Exactly. That's, yeah. There's no guarantee when you're taking a look at the electronic voting here. That's up in the air. I think one of the things that the Iowa caucuses demonstrated last night, and you brought it up with Zenit, was it was a terrific turnout.
Yes.
And people in top caucus states tend to be more politically active than people who just cast votes. I mean, they put some more work in. So there seems to be a lot of, number one, popular support for getting rid of George Bush in the White House. And number two, that, I mean, that's just a lot of, I guess, enthusiasm behind that. Right now, I don't care who won the caucus last night. I really haven't chosen a candidate, except I know it's going to be a Democrat. Except that there were so many people out there last night saying we want somebody else that I think that momentum, I'm optimistic that that momentum is going to carry over through the rest of the nomination process.
Yes, that's why Terry and I both suggested that we thought George W. Bush was one of the big losers last night because the Democrats did show that lust to find a candidate who can beat him.
And another interesting fact I saw about last night was 72% of the people who participated last night were opposed to the war.
Yes.
But the two big winners had voted for the war, which tells me, number one, they're willing to forgive Democrats who said we'll support the war in Iraq. And number two, they seem to be saying, we don't care whether you supported it or not. It's not a Democratic war. It was a Republican war. We're opposing them, and we're going to work up the support to give Bush a pink slip.
That's a really good explanation, Will. I was trying to figure out for myself how to reconcile the fact that 79% of them were against the war, and yet they voted number one and two for people who voted for the war. And that's a pretty good explanation. It's their war, not ours, and we need to go after them, I think, is the answer. Well, Will, I heard what you said, but let's just go back to that. Give us a prediction. Who's going to win the election on November 2nd?
As I said, as long as the Supreme Court doesn't do the counting, I think the Democratic candidate is going to win. I monitor the polls fairly closely, not just individual polls, but trends over time.
Yeah.
And George Bush has a lot of people who have already, the number of undecideds, you pick any recent poll, the number of undecideds is really very small for this early in the process. A lot of people have made up their minds.
Yeah, that's right. But he also has a lot of really strong supporters. There are people who love President George W.
I do, but again, more people voted against him than with him last time.
And yeah.
So if they don't change a single mind,
yes,
then George Bush is going to be in the minority again. But again, that's no guarantee that he'll pull another Florida 2000 out of his hat. I think the Democrat will have more votes. Whether that's enough to win or not, I can't go on that limb.
I think you got to assume that our country is not going to let this happen again. Whoever gets the most votes this time is going to be president.
I think one of the
isn't
problems
right?
we had last time was the fact that nobody believed that he would be, that Bush would be so, I guess, ruthless. You know, Al Gore
Nixonian.
Because he didn't want to turn it into an ugly partisan fight. And George Bush was perfectly willing to get as ugly and as partisan as he felt it would be to win. And I don't think anybody believed he would stoop so low until he'd actually done it.
No,
this guy's more Nixonian than Nixon.
Oh, Terry, I don't buy that. I mean, he went to the United States Supreme Court. I don't think that's the low road. That's not so bad.
Well, you go to the United States Supreme Court if the United States Supreme Court doesn't have jurisdiction and they decide to hear an equal protection argument, which Scalia said they wouldn't hear, and which they turned around and said, you know, they didn't even argue the equal protection argument in the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court decided it on an equal protection issue.
I mean, you're suggesting he wouldn't have gone to the Supreme Court if his dad hadn't appointed three of those guys on that court?
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Will. Thanks very much. And we're going to hold you to this prediction now on November 3rd. We'll see if you were right.
I'll call you back on the 4th of November. How's that?
Got it. And we'll see who was right.
Okay.
Thank you.
To clarify, I don't think he was Nixonian in going to the Supreme Court, but I do think his administration has been Nixonian in almost every respect in terms of political calculations, even going to the investigation of Paul O'Neill. Bob Haldeman couldn't have done a better play than that one.
Yeah, that was kind of a low blow. Terry's talking about the former Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill, who was fired by George W. Bush. Some would say he was fired for telling the truth. He said that we were going to have deficits as far as the eye could see, and he was kicked out of office. Just published a book that's quite critical of the president, And the White House responded by saying we're investigating him for leaking secret material, which I think we've now determined the one document they were aiming at had previously been published on the Internet, so it couldn't have been too secret. But, yeah, and that fits the pattern of going after Wilson, the diplomat, who reported that Iraq wasn't trying to buy nuclear weapons, and the White House leaked news about his wife, the CIA agent, which is pretty low and, in fact, illegal or arguably illegal. The good news about that is I'm struck by the fact that John Ashcroft, the attorney general, although he did the initial investigation, has now turned it over to a U.S. attorney, a Republican, but a guy who's reputedly quite independent, and that suggests that they... Do you think that suggests they're serious about it, or he's just foisting it off?
Tells me that he was going to name a truly independent counsel. He would have done that as opposed to a political appointee that serves at the will and pleasure of the attorney general.
Yeah, you damn you political types are so cynical. I think I would trust this guy. He's got a good reputation. I think the problem is they're always leak investigations, and I don't think that anybody's found a leaker since maybe the guy who leaked George Washington's laundry list in 1791 or something. They just never find the leaker.
It's kind of funny, though. The one person came up with the idea of, Senator Schumer came up with the idea of asking every White House aide to waive their reporter privilege so that the reporters could come forward and tell them who gave them the story. I thought that was an interesting twist.
It was an interesting twist, but that's not going to work either, because whether or not your source says it's okay to name me, the reporter is not going to name the source. I certainly wouldn't, and I don't think Bob Novak would. That would not be a useful thing to do. However, you do think that the President of the United States could call these people who work for him into the Oval Office and say, I'm very concerned about this business of outing a secret CIA agent. Could you please tell me if you were the guy? But President Bush said he's not capable of doing that.
Well, the question, though, becomes if the privilege is waived by the source, does a reporter, can he still invoke that privilege if called before a grand jury?
I would. As a reporter, if my source were under political pressure from the boss to say, you can name me, probably he would then call me secretly and say, I don't really mean it. But in any case, I wouldn't do that. Anyway, we're now going to move on to the topics of the President's State of the Union address tonight. We'll be back shortly. Remember, it's Tom Reed, T.R. Reed, filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, snow showers, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Bank One. Investigators are still working to solve the murder of a woman at a Littleton gift shop over the weekend. Doctors today performed an autopsy of the woman, although results may not be available for up to a week. Investigators believe robbery was the motive for the murder, but are still putting together clues to support that theory. U.S. bank officials are warning their customers to be alert to an email scam that's designed to get customers to give out private information. The bogus email tells customers their account has been compromised by outside parties involved in money laundering, illegal drugs, and terrorism. If you've already gotten this email, or if you do get it, you're asked to contact the U.S. Bank Fraud Center. A ruling by the Colorado Supreme Court today will allow students to present character witnesses during an expulsion hearing. The case stems from an expulsion case against a Golden High School 10th grader who was not allowed to have an expulsion hearing. The High Court deadlocked on the decision, meaning a lower court ruling stands. The appeals court had earlier said that the student's rights had been violated. In sports, the Denver Nuggets take on the Jazz in Utah tonight. Earlier this month, the last time the Nuggets and Jazz played, the Nuggets came away with a win. Stop by Bank One and get maximum strength checking, the most powerful form of checking known to money, now with free customized email alerts that can save you money. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:37.
The fuel-injected big block, the V8, the precision-engineered supercharged hot rod. I'm Jason Priestley. Join me for a spin in TLC's newest series, Rides. It's custom cars from conception to modification to acceleration. High-speed, in-depth rides. Get your motor running. Tonight at 9, only on TLC.
Welcome to our store. Can I help you?
Yeah, how does this TurboTax software work?
Oh, it's easy. TurboTax asks you simple questions like an accountant would and puts your answers on all the right forms.
Does it check for errors?
Yeah, audit flags too, and calculations are guaranteed accurate. For less than $30, it's a great deal.
Wow. Do you sell a lot of these?
Oh, yeah, it's our best seller. Like 19 million people filed their returns with it last year.
All right, let's make that 19 million and one.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy, taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC News Time is 1:38. Time to go to Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Just getting a report of an accident. Perhaps there's some injuries involved in this one. It's at University and Virginia, just south of the Cherry Creek Shopping Mall. And a couple of police cars were on the scene there checking that situation out. Freeway system around town looking good. Last time we checked the CDOT sensors, they were showing speeds in the 50s and 60s, despite the road conditions outside. Perhaps the best advice for the rest of the afternoon, leave a little extra space between you and the car in front. This report is service of Waterway Gas and Wash. It's the best car wash in town, and they have a winter protection package for you that helps protect your car from the worst of winter's snow, salt, slush, and grime. Pay him a visit today. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Our scattered snow showers are going to leave behind about an inch accumulation as we head through the late afternoon and into this evening. We'll top out around 35 for the high. The snow will taper off tonight as we drop back into the mid-teens. It'll be mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the mid-30s, and we're back in the 40s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under cloudy skies, we've got some snow showers, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:40. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the parquet and mezzanine one sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Don't miss the Colorado Symphony Orchestra's performance of Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2, Wagner's Overture to the Flying Dutchman, Barber's Adagio for Strings, and more on January 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Tickets available at all King Super's Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC Market Watch.
The lemmings are running toward the edge of the cliff. That word from mutual fund tracking firm TrimTabs, which says investors poured over $8.5 billion into U.S. stock funds the first 9 days of January. As for the so-called lemmings, TrimTab says inflows will likely remain heavy in the near term. Maybe not today, though. Markets remain mixed inside the final hour of trading, with the Dow off 52 points. NASDAQ right now is up 5. The S&P 500 is losing a half point. Dow's negative despite better-than-expected profit reports from names like General Motors and Citigroup, but it's not enough for Hugh Johnson, Chief Investment Officer at First Albany.
The overall earnings of the S&P 500, even though we've only seen 66 companies, look like they're coming in right about where we'd forecast the earnings to be for the fourth quarter. So good news, yeah, but not great news, and you need great news when the market's a little pricey.
Still, Johnson says markets could rise tomorrow if investors are upbeat about the President's State of the Union address. Joe Matthew from MarketWatch.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
Yes. Hi, it's Tom Reed, T.R. Reed, filling in for Enid Goldstein. The show is Enid Live, but we don't have Enid Live today. We have T.R. Reed instead taking Enid's place while she's in sunny Venice, as she reported to us. We're talking about politics. We've been talking about the Iowa caucuses, and now we're going to look ahead to tonight when George W. Bush basically starts his campaign for re-election with his State of the Union address. Sue in Denver has been very kindly waiting. Let's see what she has to say about that. Hello, Sue. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you, T.R. Reed.
Thanks.
I said that because I have been listening to you on NPR for a number of years.
Oh, good for you, Sue.
And I always enjoyed your reports from Japan and then England, and was really excited last week when I heard you were going to fill in for Enid.
Well, you're a discerning listener. What can I say? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And yes, everything surprised me yesterday.
Yes.
And I'm glad Howard Dean did as bad as he did.
How come?
Because we didn't know him that well. I didn't.
Yes.
Or heard about him. And then I was interested in seeing this man come out of nowhere and kind of reading up on him and everything. But his behavior, getting upset with fellow colleagues,
yes,
the way he reacts to interviews, I just felt he was arrogant.
He came across that way, didn't he? He has a temper, but you have to give him points. I'm a political reporter. I admire successful politicians. And as you said, he came from zero to be the leader in about a 10-month span. He raised more money than any Democrat in history. You got to give him points for that, but I have a feeling his campaign isn't going to last much longer.
You know, I'm glad.
Yeah, and who would you like to see get the nomination?
I did vote for Bush last time.
Oh, you did?
And I have been a longtime Democrat.
Oh, really?
But
and what? Was it something appealing about George W. Bush, or you couldn't stomach Al Gore?
I just wanted to get Clinton, and I felt Al Gore was with Clinton, even though he was trying to, you know, distance himself from Clinton at the end.
He tried to run away from him, yes,
yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
I just wanted them out of there.
So you're the most elusive figure in American politics. You're the winnable voter that can go to either party.
Yes, I could.
You're the person that everybody wants to get. They're going to spend $200 or $300 million this year to get your vote.
Well, you know what, TR? I could use a nice vacation in the Bahamas.
You know, I said I was just covering the Iowa caucuses, and while I was there, the woman who was George W. Bush's state chairman in the 2000 Iowa caucuses, she's a state senator, it was announced this December that she got a new job. She did get ambassador to the Bahamas. That's what you get if you win.
Darn.
See, so if you could just run Colorado for the winner here, then I think we could do, southern France for you, maybe.
Oh, or hey, that would work.
Italy, you could meet Enid. Yeah, would be nice.
But I think...
Well, do you think George W. Bush can hold your vote this time?
No. I really am swaying away from him because in my type of work, I work a lot with the elderly, and I see where he thinks he's really helping with what he's been doing with the Medicare and the prescriptions, but they don't realize how hard our senior citizens have to fight for every dollar that they have.
Yes.
And it's always been a lot of word plays they're going to do on both sides.
Well, we're told that in his State of the Union address tonight, the president is going to brag about this and say he finally delivered something for seniors.
Well,
what do you think?
Yes, that's what they're saying, but what is it going to be? And then on the immigration issue, Tia, I just get so upset with it because our tax dollars, it's just like they take over, they get voted in, and it's like their own money.
What did he do on immigration that bothers you?
It's this amnesty deal.
Oh, I see.
And in Colorado, our taxes did go up because of Denver General. We're having to, you know, pay more money out.
Yes.
So that they can take care of the illegal immigrants in the emergency rooms. And when we have so many senior citizens, people unemployed, without insurance, come on, let's start taking care of our own people. So you can see I go back and forth on a few things.
Yeah, you're the most desired person in America because both sides have a chance to win your vote. I don't think you're quite decided. You think you're not going to vote against Bush.
let's just wait and see.
Let's wait and see. That's why they're going to come after you, Sue. They really want that. You have the most precious commodity in the United States in an election year.
Well,
you get to vote for the most powerful man in the world, and you don't even know who it's going to be yet.
And, TR, it's just so nice having you here.
Delighted. Thank you very much. Good to be here. But I'm not going to let you go, Sue, unless you make my bold prediction. Who do you think is going to win?
For which, the New Hampshire? Or
No. Overall, New Hampshire's too easy. No, let's take it hard. In November,
I can't say.
Oh, come on.
Because really, TR, you know, it depends on the Democratic who finally ends up winning.
Yeah.
And then it depends on, you know, what's been going on in the national.
I see. I hear you. Okay. Sue, I know you're going to pay close attention to the race. Good luck.
Thank you.
And let us call us back later when you decide on a candidate we'd like
to know.
You know
I will if you're there.
Yeah, I'll be here. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
I don't know what button to push, but I'll be here.
Okay.
So.
Bye now.
The next issue we want to take up with George W. Bush making his case to the American people tonight is what issues do you think ought to be issues in the campaign? What do you think people ought to be thinking about when they vote? Would it be the war in Iraq? Is that a voting issue for you? Our health care system and the president's efforts to change it and the Democratic charge that he hasn't changed it enough? Would it be the loss of jobs? We've lost 2.8 million jobs during President Bush's presidency, but in recent months, at least the number has stabilized. I don't know if it's getting any better. Would it be the pattern of the president's tax cuts? Do you agree that he's hit a pattern of tax cuts that's right and that rewards the right people? And should the issue be the deficit? The president inherited the biggest surplus in American history from his predecessor, a fellow named Bill Clinton. And he used up all the surplus, and he's run up the biggest deficit in American history every year of his presidency. According to the White House budget office, he's added about $2 trillion to the debt that our kids are going to have to pay off. Should that be an issue in the campaign? Does anybody think President Bush is going to talk about it in the State of the Union address tonight? What issues would you like to hear him talk about? What do you think we ought to be voting on? We'll get back to that question in just a minute, but for right now, I'm T.R. Reid, filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm tired. I'm stressed. I want to be pampered, and I don't want to have to go to some expensive spa to do it.
That whining woman you just heard is Evelinda Ehrman, and I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live. In order to shut Evelinda up, I bought her a gift certificate to Salon Mercedes, a full-service salon near the Denver Tech Center, I-25 and Orchard. The staff is so well-trained, experienced, and friendly, they'll even put up with her whining.
Thank you. Oh, goody, goody, goody. Look what I can choose from. A new haircut and color. Waxes. Microdermabrasion. I like this Take Yourself Away package that gives me a manicure, pedicure, massage, and facial.
You need it, honey. Your roots are showing and your nails are chipped.
Nice of you to notice.
Salon Mercedes, located I-25 and Orchard. Open Mondays through Fridays, 8 to 7. Saturdays, 8 to 5:30. 303-741-0606. Treat yourself and everyone on your list to a Salon Mercedes gift certificate. 303-741-0606.
Salon Mercedes, so close to you.
I own a chain of spas. We offer mud baths, hydrotherapy, everything to de-stress our clients. So if we run into a cash flow problem, the last thing we want is to start stressing out ourselves.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of Open, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It's very calming.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Looking for love in all the wrong places? Try the Max Fund Animal Adoption Center, located at 1025 Galapago Street. The Max Fund is the only no-kill shelter in the Denver area for injured animals with no known owners. They have numerous loving cats and dogs available for adoption, and also offer low-cost spays and neuters. To find a friend or volunteer your time, call 303-595-4917 or go to www.maxfund.org.
Gentlemen, are you still trying to rid yourself of a few pesky pounds? Need a helping hand to get rid of the first few? Finding it difficult to make it happen? Well, listen closely, because UltraCarb may be the answer you're looking for. There are lots of products out there making lots of promises. A new one seems to crop up every day, but UltraCarb has been around for years and has helped hundreds of thousands of Americans in the battle against carbohydrates. You know carbohydrates. Foods like pizza, pasta, and beer, they are the arch enemy of the flat stomach. But the active ingredient in UltraCarb helps slow the transition of carbohydrates from sugar to fat. That may be just the edge you need to rid yourself of some of those unwanted pounds. Sometimes diet and reasonable exercise just aren't enough to get over the hump. That's where UltraCarb can help. Best of all, UltraCarb is guaranteed to help or your money back. Make the most of your weight loss goals with UltraCarb.
Call now for your risk-free trial of UltraCarb. 1-800-451-6432. That's 1-800-451-6432. Toll free. 1-800-451-6432.
AM 1150, KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Well, not really back to Enid Goldstein. We're back to T.R. Reid. I'm sitting in for Enid today, and because Enid is in sunny Venice, as we heard. We've been talking about politics and yesterday's Iowa caucuses. Van in Boulder has been kindly waiting. Let's hear what Van has to say. Van, I'm so sorry we kept you waiting.
Hey, you know, TR, no problem. Loved your book, Confucius Lives Next Door.
Oh, you are an intelligent man. What can I say? Did you hear that, everybody? Loved my book.
Well, you know, it actually took me back to high school, because I went to high school in Bangkok.
Did you really? Wow.
And which was kind of weird. But, it totally took me back to just, like, living in a little compound with five other families and... You know, just, yeah, it was crazy. It was great. And,
you are great, man. Thank you. Thanks for remembering my book.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're dying to know about the unification of Europe and the United States of Europe. That's my next book. You'll want to read that one, too.
Well,
right,
you know,
man?
What? Actually, it's kind of, I've been having a deja vu all over again type thing going on, just because one of the first books that I read when I became politically aware was Kevin Phillips' book about the rise of the right back
yes.
in the mid-early 80s.
Yeah.
And I just finished reading his latest book about the Bushes.
It's pretty tough on the Bushes, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
He trashes them.
Oh, he absolutely eviscerates them. It's one of the harshest hatchet jobs I've ever seen or ever read.
Really? And
yeah,
he was a Republican. There's no question about it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been kind of interesting. And the thing was is that until this year, I Dean got me definitely involved in politics. I actually went to a Democratic meeting back last summer or so, just to kind of find out about this Dean character. Maybe
yes.
It was in the fall.
Yeah.
And I found out that I'd been registered as an independent for the last 10 years. So,
really?
That was the first thing I had to do was switch over and actually get registered as a Democrat. And then, as I've gone through the process and I've watched things, kind of develop, I've definitely been supporting Dean. I've gotten a few of my buddies to register to vote. We've all figured out where our precinct is.
Yeah, good.
We're looking to get involved in the caucus and all that sort of thing.
And now what do you think?
Well, I personally started to drift away from Dean just because I'm from the South.
Yeah.
My dad worked for the Center for Disease Control, so
I
spent a lot of time in the South, and
yeah.
I just, knowing the South, I knew that Dean just, one, he was a Yankee, and two, he was a Yankee with no clue.
Yeah, that came through clearly, didn't it?
Yeah. It's just the sort of thing where, I really think that if a Yankee is going to run in the South and do reasonably well down there, they're going to basically have to call the Republicans on the, Southern strategy. say, look, you know, I know I'm not going to get any of the racist vote, but, you know, these are the values that I bring to the table.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the Republicans, you know, will cater to the racists. That's fine. We'll leave that to them. And I don't think a Yankee's ever going to get by down south because that it's so subtle. It's
you think
so
this
subtle.
Is true of John Kerry, too? Is he too Yankee?
You know, he may very well be because, you know, the thing is he at least hasn't talked enough to make himself look like a fool down there, you know?
And he announced his candidacy in South Carolina. Do you remember that? That was quite striking.
Yeah, and I can see a Kerry Edwards ticket, you know, to try to ameliorate some of that.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, and the thing is you can win the presidency without winning the South. So, you know, you go and you look at some of those electoral calculators, and it's completely doable.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, maybe you just call them for what they are down there in the Republican strategy in the South. And
well, Van, I'm assuming that George W. Bush can't win your vote.
Oh, there's no way. Yeah, there's absolutely no way in hell that boy. I mean, I'm at this point, it's ABB for me, anybody but Bush.
Yeah, so which Democrat do you think is most likely?
You know, I don't know. I've got $500 on a Democrat beating Bush right now. I actually laid some money on it.
Yeah, and they gave you the field. You mean any Democrat?
Any Democrat.
So that's a pretty smart bet, I think, just in pure gambling terms. You got everybody.
Well, you know, the thing is that I got a 2-to-1 odds when I placed my bet about a month and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah, geez, you're going to be a rich man.
Aren't that good anymore.
Well, what's your bet then right now? Do you think you're going to win this money, or is Bush going to be reelected?
I think I'll be taking home $1,000 on November 2nd.
Remember your friends, Van, when you get this money. Thanks very much for calling us. It's the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC, and we'll be back after 2 to talk about college admissions.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, still some snow showers, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Heritage for the Blind. The search for clues continues in the death of a Littleton woman Saturday night. Doctors performed an autopsy on the body of 46-year-old Rhonda Holland early this morning. Holland's body was found Sunday morning in the basement of the Season Giving gift shop at 5757 South Rapp in Littleton. Littleton Police Sergeant Sean Dugan says officers are also investigating a dumpster behind the motel where Holland's car was later found.
It was removed from the location and taken to a secure site indoors where investigators can meticulously go through and examine any property they find in it. It's quite full. We'll have to go through it piece by piece, and that, as you can understand, takes some time.
Investigators believe robbery was the motive for the murder, but they're still looking for clues to back up that theory. Holland's car was later found at that motel near Santa Fe and Bowles. One man was questioned in Holland's murder, later arrested on unrelated warrants. Police are not calling him a suspect at this time. The Arapahoe County District Attorney was supposed to do a walkthrough of the gift shop and the motel early this morning, but had to reschedule. Investigators say it could be a week before results of that autopsy are known. U.S. bank customers beware. Bank officials say there's an email designed to get customers to give out private information. The bogus email tells customers their account has been compromised by outside parties involved in money laundering, illegal drugs, and terrorism. The email goes on to say unless a link is clicked, the recipient will be unable to use their account in any way until certain information is verified. The email then asks for your account number and Social Security number. State fraud investigators say the emails come from an ATT.net address, not from a USBank.com address. If you have received this email, or if you do, you're asked to contact the U.S. Bank Fraud Center at 877-595-6256, or you can contact them by email through their website at USBank.com. Students have a right to present character witnesses at an expulsion hearing. That's the effect of today's Colorado Supreme Court ruling that we'll have on state schools. The case stems from an expulsion case at Golden High School 4 years ago. Then 10th grader Ashley Nichols was expelled for fighting. Nichols requested an expulsion hearing to present character witnesses on her behalf. School officials rejected that request and expelled her for the rest of the year. Tuesday morning, today, the state Supreme Court handed down a split 3-3 decision on the case. The court did not elaborate on that ruling. With the Supreme Court deadlocked, the ruling of an appeals court stands. Lower courts ruled that the school board's refusal to hold an expulsion hearing violated Nichols' rights. Jeffco schools say they have since changed their expulsion policies, and they now allow staff members to testify on behalf of students. Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt's days in the political arena are coming to an end. The longtime Democratic lawmaker announced today he's pulling out of the presidential race and intends to return to private life when his congressional term comes to an end. Gephardt broke down as he spoke about the silver lining and his family.
Jane, Matt, Chrissy, and Kate. Are my life. And to them, I'll always be grateful.
Gephardt said he'll be able to see his family at every opportunity, quote, rather than when opportunities could be found. He stressed while his career in public life is coming to an end, the fight is far from over. Meanwhile, the remaining Democratic candidates are focusing on New Hampshire in preparation for that state's primary a week from today. John Kerry, fresh off his surprising win in the Iowa caucuses, is closing the lead on frontrunner Howard Dean in most polls. Kerry picked up 38% of the Iowa votes. Dean garnered only 18%, good for a third-place finish yesterday. Veteran newsman Jerry Nachman has died after battling cancer for the past year. He was 57. Nachman was the vice president and editor-in-chief for MSNBC. A statement on the MSNBC website calls Nachman a great friend and colleague who will be terribly missed. Nachman previously held reporting and management positions at a variety of news organizations, including WNBC-TV, WCBS-TV, WCBS Radio, and the New York Post. His distinguished career earned him numerous honors, including an Emmy Award. Nachman died overnight at his home in Hoboken, New Jersey. Just before the close of today's trading session, stocks were mixed. The Dow is down more than 75 points, the NASDAQ up nearly 4, and the S&P 500 down just about a point. In sports, the Denver Nuggets head into the Delta Center tonight to take on the Utah Jazz. Nuggets beat the Jazz when they last played earlier this month. Don't sell it, don't trade it. Call 1-800-2-DONATE and donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Call 1-800-2-DONATE for hassle-free pickup, 1-800-2-DONATE, or visit taxdeduction.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
The fuel-injected big block, the V8, the precision-engineered supercharged hot rod. I'm Jason Priestley. Join me for a spin in TLC's newest series, Ride. It's custom cars from conception to modification to acceleration. High speed, in-depth, Rides. Get your motor running. Tonight at 9, only on TLC.
Welcome to our store. Can I help you?
Yeah, how does this TurboTax software work?
Oh, it's easy. TurboTax asks you simple questions like an accountant would and puts your answers on all the right forms.
Does it check for errors?
Yeah, audit flags too, and calculations are guaranteed accurate. For less than $30, it's a great deal.
Wow. Do you sell a lot of these?
Oh, yeah, it's our best seller. Like 19 million people filed their returns with it last year.
All right, let's make that 19 million and one.
TurboTax. Taxes made easy, taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to check with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
And just into the KNRC Traffic Center, a report of an accident westbound I-76 west of Pecos Street. So watch for some equipment in that general area. Rest of the freeway system looking good on this snowy afternoon. Last time we checked the CDOT sensor, they were showing some pretty high speeds along the freeways, about 50 and 60 miles an hour. And that's pretty decent given the road conditions, but perhaps the best advice for the rest of the afternoon, leave a little extra space between you and the car ahead of you, just in case those roads really get slick later on. Downtown, there's an accident at 13th and Stout Street. And good news, if you're traveling I-25 tonight through the T-Rex project, crews managed to finish the Hampton Avenue bridge work that they wanted to do last night, so I-25 won't be closed tonight. Have your kitchen cabinets installed by licensed and insured professionals through the Home Depot at Home Services, that is. Visit your local store today for more information. The Home Depot at Home Services, installation you can trust. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The flakes will continue to fly as we get those widely scattered snow showers, not only through the afternoon, but into this evening and the first part of tonight. But it'll all end after midnight. We'll get up to about 35 for our high today. dropping down to around 14 for the overnight low. Look for sunshine mid-30s tomorrow and 40s for highs on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Cloudy skies, snow showers, 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
Yes, the Enid Goldstein Show continues, but without Enid Goldstein. It's T.R. Reid filling in for Enid, who's in Venice today, sunny Venice, unlike cold, snowy, wet Denver. And we've been talking about politics, but today we're going to, right now, we're going to switch topics a little bit. We're still going to talk about a group of people who are angst-ridden, pressured, sleep-deprived, nail-biting, just going crazy hour by hour, but we're not talking about the Democratic candidate for president this time. We're going to talk about another angst-ridden, pressure-driven group, at least in my view, America's high school seniors, 18-year-old kids all over this land who are applying for college admission right now. We're right in the middle of the season. And we're going to talk about the how this system works and the pressures on the kids and the pressures on the colleges with America's leading expert on college admissions, Jay Matthews. Jay Matthews is the education writer for the Washington Post. He's the author of several terrific books in this field, including the book of Escalante, America's Greatest Teacher, which became the movie Stand and Deliver, at least the story became the movie. Jay wrote a book called Class Struggle about America's high schools, what's right and wrong with them. And his last book, I think, is the best title of any Jay Matthews book, Harvard Schmarvard. This is the book that suggests you don't have to go to Harvard, Yale, or Stanford to be happy, that there are hundreds of colleges out there, and one of them might be more right for you or your teenager than Harvard is. Now, I don't know what buttons to push because I'm just filling in here, but Jay, do I have you on the line?
Hello, TR. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. This is Jay Matthews talking to us from Washington.
We're two news print reporters. I'm amazed that you're able to do this with such aplomb.
Hey, look, I can handle this technology. Nothing to it. What did I just push the wrong button? I don't know. I can't even figure out the buttons here, but very nice to have you on. I really liked your books. I just want to say for the benefit of our audience that Jay Matthews also is the fella who picks America's best high schools for Newsweek magazine. Have you done that twice?
Three times.
And this is
three-time offender in some views.
Exactly. It's a very controversial list, controversy being the right word here. Naturally, the people at or connected with America, the schools that Jay rates as America's best, think he's brilliant. He's the last word on education. And the schools that feel they ought to be on the list but didn't make it, and that's thousands of them, they find Jay Matthews' procedure somewhat controversial. But we're not going to do so much on high school today as we are going to do high school seniors and college admission. Now, as you just heard, I think having gone through this process fairly recently three times with my kids and hanging out with a lot of teenagers, that these kids are that we have put impossible pressure on this group of Americans, but I gather from reading Harvard Schmarvard, you don't agree with me?
Well, I think we have put a great deal of pressure on kids. I think they're handling it better than we thought. I think some parents, and even more likely kids, are beginning to realize that the situation is well into the absurd. I mean, this is...
Yes.
This is... you know, the some of those plays that we used to have to read in college. This is way beyond that. I had a, I know of a kid who, in a high school in this area, who got 800s on every test. Both of his parents are Yale graduates. He was deferred by Yale.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Which is impossible.
And I mean, he couldn't have done more.
Couldn't have happened. The only way that could be, 5 years ago, I mean, the only way that could have happened, he would have had to kill at least one or both of those parents.
Yeah, not to get in.
For him.
Yeah.
And he, so the situation is now completely irrational for schools of that upper crust, you know, selective sort. They're picking and choosing kids, on whims, essentially. You know, they've got no other scars to guide by because they've got five or six times as many qualified kids as they have places. And so, you know, I think a lot of the kids are the first to realize how absurd this is and to relax about it. Parents are sort of getting into it. But the thing that we have to keep in mind is that we now have in this country, thank goodness, the best and most accessible higher education system that ever existed.
You mean the world doesn't end if you don't get into Yale?
Exactly. And you know, the system, there are so many great kids now applying to college, so many PhDs who are good teachers out there, that you can go down 200, 300 schools in any depth chart you have and find schools that are just as good as Harvard or Yale or even Princeton, DR.
Nothing's as good as Princeton, I have to say.
Respects. So, you know, and kids, once the kids realize that, and the kids are getting the vibes back from their older brothers and sisters in the upperclassmen in high school who go to places you haven't heard of and come back and saying, this is great. You know, Harvard can't be as good as this. And those of us who have been to places like Harvard and realize that they're not that great in many ways are trying to spread that message. That's my message. I mean, people saying, well, you went to Harvard. What are you doing trashing Harvard? I'm the only one who can speak often with authority about how inadequate a Harvard education often is.
Well, it worked for you.
Classrooms full of professors you never see.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that saved Harvard for me was the student newspaper. If I hadn't had that, it would have been a very unhappy experience for me.
You know, my brother went to Harvard, and I said to him when he went, he's younger than I said, you have to take the class by John King Fairbanks and Edwin Reischauer. Those are the two men who invented East Asian studies in America. They were still teaching that East Asia survey course at Harvard, and I said to my brother, you got to take it. These are the kings of this field. And I then asked him later, what are they like? And he said, geez, I don't know what they're like. I never get there on time to get in the lecture hall. I'm in the spillover room watching on TV. So why go to Harvard?
That's true.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's what I think our role as, you know, those experts, the self-described experts like me, and you know, wise counselors and other people who know about colleges, is to point out to kids this great fact, and point out, by the way, what the central point of my book is. There's now studies that show that it doesn't matter if you get into prestigious college or not. I mean, in life. I mean, those of us who think about our own lives. You know, I'm in my 50s now, and I look at all the people at the Washington Post who have done much better than I and who are above me in the line of command, who tell me what to do each day, and they went to places like State University of New York at Buffalo or Ohio State, places that we sort of thumbed our nose at when I was a young, stupid, arrogant undergraduate at Harvard. Those are places that really train people and give them just the kind of a background that they need to succeed in my business, and it doesn't matter which college you go to, as long as, and there's the kicker for parents should know, if your kid has really got enough gumption to apply to one of these selective schools, and that sort of tells you that that's a kid who's going to succeed in life because he has a certain sense of himself, and that's a quality of character that is going to determine whether he's going to be a success or not. And you can look at, you know, the colleges that our senators went to, the colleges that our CEOs of our top 500.
You've done that study. Yeah, you do that in the book, don't you?
And they're all, you know, there are lots of big state universities, lots of little Bible colleges, lots of places you haven't heard of or didn't think much of, thought of as big football schools.
Yes.
And they're not. They're great places to learn.
Does the credential matter, Jay? I mean, are you better off finding your first job with a Harvard degree rather than an East Texas degree?
People think so. There is no studies to back up that thought. And my own sense of it is this. People talk about the great contacts that you get when you go to an Ivy League school. Well, contacts aren't a measure of the quality of the brand recognition of the school you go to. They're a measure of your energy, your willingness to sit down at a telephone, pull out the alumni directory of whatever school you go to, and start calling the important people who graduated from that school. I just told you that a lot of them are going to be CEOs of important companies.
Yeah.
All that matters is, again, the character traits, persistence, humor, charm. If you have the ability and the gumption to sit down as you're graduating from any college and calling up, you know, important alumni who interest you, who are in fields you're interested in, and making that contact, then that's the you're going to have a great life.
Well, what do you think about politics? If you look at our last election, it was a Yale grad versus a Harvard grad.
Well, yes.
This election looks like it may well be a Yale grad versus a Yale grad.
Yes.
Isn't this saying something about the power of the credential?
No, because it's a fluke.
Oh.
I mean, I made a in the book I sort of recite the alma maters of the governors and the senators
yeah.
listed in the Almanac of American Politics. And when you look at those lists, you get an entirely different view of who's in power and who's not. Here, for instance, are the first 25, the alma maters of the first 25 governors listed in the 2002 Almanac of American Politics.
Okay, let's hear them.
Alabama, Yale, Kansas, Wachika Baptist, Stanford, Austin State, Villanova, No College. In 2002, the governor of Delaware was Ruth Ann Minner, who was a high school dropout who got her GED.
Yeah.
Texas, Georgia, Berkeley, Idaho, Ferris State, Indiana, Hamilton, Kansas Wesleyan, Kentucky, Louisiana State University, Dartmouth, Florida State, Trinity, Michigan State, North Hennepin Community College.
Yeah.
That's our wrestler in Minnesota.
Yes.
Mississippi and Southwest Missouri State. Now, there are a couple of Ivies in there, but most of these are state universities. That's where our governors go, and our governors are usually the ones that become president in our system. We've had, you know, a couple of Yaleys who became president. Ronald Reagan was a graduate of Eureka College.
Yes.
Lyndon Johnson was a graduate of, Southwest San Marcos
State?
State.
Teachers,
I forgot which one. Teachers College.
Yeah.
And, you know, the number of presidents who graduated from insignificant colleges far outnumbers those that graduated from the Ivies.
So I'd have to say that the message of your book is, to me, doesn't seem to be getting out. Well, you say it does get out there. The kids know it. But there's enormous competition for those, 40 or 50 colleges that are selective.
You know, I think I'm so far a miserable success. I'm still trying. A miserable failure in this regard.
At getting your message out. Screwed it up, yeah.
It's because what we're dealing with is essentially an addiction. I call it Ivy Hallism. It's like alcoholism.
Ivy Hallism.
It's not something that we can ever really conquer. We're all recovering Ivy Hallics. And so, you know, I had the same experience. My kid, my last child, Katie, who applied to college last year, and decided she didn't want to go to any of the Ivies, and applied early action to early decision to a really great small school, Pomona, which is out in Claremont, California.
Yep.
And she got in, and I was very happy about that. And I found myself, when I was telling people about this place, that it's very selective, I would say. You know, only 20% of the kids get in. I was showing the same signs of Ivy Hallism that my friends whose kids
yeah.
And I had that moment. You know, the definition of whether or not your kid is into a brand name school is defined this way. You're at Moy Milan, and a neighbor who knows that your kid just, you know, was college letter time, came over and said, well, where did Katie go to school? And you utter the name of the school, and whether or not it's a brand name, if it's a brand name, then you see a smile of recognition, and if it's not a brand name, you see this look of disdain or puzzlement. And I was at the softball field at Katie's High School after she got into Pomona, and a friendly parent came over and said, well, you know, where did Katie get in? I said, Pomona. And the parent said, where's that?
Oh,
and I had the same feelings of, you know, self-loathing. My kid didn't get into a school that this parent, my high school knows about. So there's no way that we can totally conquer these feelings, but we have to use our brains and realize that it doesn't make any difference. And fortunately, the young people that we're concerned about, it's the parents' problem more than the kids' problem. The young people,
when they
get into any college, the kind of college that, you know, of any of the range that they want, after about the first 3 hours, they're in heaven.
Yeah.
They've got new people. There's music playing. There's a course catalog they can thumb through. They've got a new life going. They're adults for the first time. And all this nonsense about prestige and what rank you had on the U.S. news list just fades away.
Thank you. Now, Jay, I got to stop for a minute. We'll pay some bills here at KNRC, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes, so please hang on, because here's what I want to ask you. I bet you could go to Southwest Missouri for about $2,500 a year. People pay, 15 times as much to go to Harvard. So when we come back, let's find out why people are willing to do that. It's T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Don't settle for half the talk. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNIC.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. They have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
John Brown's Body, the newest production at the Denver Center Theater Company, is adapted from Stephen Vincent Benet's Civil War epic. This Pulitzer Prize-winning drama features a cast of 20 actors playing 283 roles on both sides of the conflict, capturing the heroes, villains, cruelty, and courage of the bloodiest war in American history. And you can see this richly textured and masterful story for free just by listening to KNRC this Friday, January 23rd from noon to 3 p.m., when we'll be giving away tickets to John Brown's Body, another great reason to listen to AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kelly. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Hi, Colorado. We're not back to Enid Goldstein. We're back to T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein, and we're talking to America's leading expert on college and college admissions, Jay Matthews. And I just want to say, if we have some listeners who are going through this process or have gone through this process, give us a call at 303-382-1150. Now, Jay Matthews, I asked you a minute ago to please explain, since you've been arguing, and you argue in your book, Harvard Schmarvard, I love that title, you've been arguing that people can get just as good an education and have just as good a life professionally and in other ways, if they went to Southwest Missouri as to Harvard. Why is it that people who could send their kid to Southwest Missouri for $2,500 a year are willing to spend $40,000 a year sending their students to Harvard?
Well, why are people thinking they can spend $100,000 on, what, a Lamborghini, and they're getting a better car than if they spend $20,000 on a Saturn?
Aren't they?
We are a consumer culture.
Yes.
Which judges products and colleges and everything else based on how much they cost. And if we think we're spending the big bucks, then we think we're getting the highest quality. And that extends to almost every part of life, and it extends to colleges.
This is not an area where you get what you pay for?
No.
Ah.
Clearly not. Smart people have figured out that the big state universities, and they're, you know, I can name, you know, 100 large state universities that have everything that Harvard has.
Yeah.
Clearly for me, I'm looking at the, you know, the great reporters of the Washington Post, the ones that went to big state universities had daily student newspapers, as my college at Harvard did. That's
yeah.
all they needed.
Yes.
A lot of time to write, you know, a lot to write about, and they're the ones who are telling me what to do each day. That's all you needed, and they were spending, obviously, as you said, at least a tenth or less than what my, you know, mother was, my mother who worked full time as a teacher,
yeah,
support me in this indulgence, was spending.
Yes. Can I just ask you, when you mentioned the great state universities, we're fairly sensitive on this out here in the great, great state of Colorado, about our state university, the University of Colorado, which I think is a pretty good school. Very smart kids from Colorado high schools go there. I gave a speech to the University of Colorado faculty last fall, and just as a joke, because I want to be a friendly, funny guy, I started off by saying it's an honor to be speaking to the faculty of America's number one party school, which CU has been voted. And guess what, Jay? They didn't laugh. They didn't find this entertaining at all, and I was later told never to make this statement again. What is that your view of the University of Colorado? Is it a party school, or do you have a feeling that it's a pretty good university?
There are almost no great universities in this country, including the ones that you and I attended, that aren't party schools at a certain level.
Of course.
And it's depressing to see how much partying goes on at these places, but that's our culture. A lot of people drink, bright people, and people get into big Ivy League schools and people who do not. The big state universities, particularly the University of Colorado, have attracted some of the best people in their fields. They have all kinds of resources, labs, well-published professors, and the extracurricular activities in terms of orchestras and newspapers and magazines and drama societies that you can get at big universities. They're huge candy stores, and we should really appreciate them for what they are.
Can you do as well, Jay, if you're a member of the freshman class at Harvard and there are, 1,100 other students, can you do as well at Colorado where there are going to be 5,000 other members of your freshman class?
Absolutely. I mean, given the greater numbers, you're always going to find at a large state university a critical mass of other students who share your interests, who are just as bright as the kids that you would have met at Harvard, and who are going to take you and your life to new heights. I mean, it's college is really a matter of finding professors who are going to guide you into your future and fellow students who are going to be with you into that future. And large state universities guarantee that you're going to have a critical mass of kids who are going to take you wherever you want to go.
You're arguing to me that high school students are starting to recognize this fact?
I get the sense that things have gotten so nutty in terms of admission to selected university. It's quite clear now to kids because they see, who gets in and who does not in their local high schools. They
Yes.
know these kids intimately. They know the decisions make no sense. They know that, Harvard could take the 20,000 applications they get, toss them in the middle of Harvard Yard, and have the admission staff just pick at random the ones off the ground and admit those kids and get a class just as strong as the one they're going to get by, combing over every application for months at a time. It's no longer a rational process. It's like being struck by lightning. And kids, once they see what's happening in their high schools, get that message. And if they're smart enough and think about it for a while, realize that the place that they're going to go to is just going to be just as good for them as any brand name school they could go to.
Do parents get this message? Dad wants her to go to Yale no matter what?
No, parents are much less likely to think about this. It's the problem is that, we're in a stage in American history where the great middle class parents like you and I define ourselves, our successes as parents by what kind of college our kids get into.
Mm.
And we're still burdened as with this addiction, this Ivy Hallism, which is in all our brains. And there's nothing else we can really pass on to our kids. We know we're not wealthy enough to leave them a lot of money. We don't have any great, mansion to hand down to them. We've got, whatever smarts we've got and, encouragement in putting them in a good high school to get them to a good school. And so we're full of, angst about this. Also, I think, and you mentioned very wisely the matter of costs. Indeed, college is getting very expensive, but I think a lot of parents, particularly parents who don't have a lot of money, miss the point that college is actually accessible still, even though the cost is going up financially more than we think. There was the American Council on Education in 1998 did a survey that asked parents how much they thought the cost of a year's in-state tuition at a four-year public university would
Yes.
be. And the average in that survey of these asking parents how much they thought it was $9,694 a year, when the actual average for a four-year public university in the United States was a quarter of that, was $2,848.
Yes.
So, we are scared by the costs. We're scared that the name won't be big enough for our kid to have a satisfactory life. And I think parents should really chill out and look at the facts and realize that they're lucky to be in this country and that they should, go forward and smile.
If you're right, then it would seem to me that the prices eventually have to converge. That is, the tuition at Southwest Missouri and the tuition at Dartmouth have to start getting closer together because people are going to read your book and figure out they don't have to pay that huge Dartmouth fee.
Well, that's true, and the other dirty little secret we know is that despite the sticker price, this $40,000 that the highest prestige universities will charge, Almost nobody pays that. 70% of the students at Harvard are getting some kind of financial aid, either grants or loans. More and more schools, even prestigious schools, are finding deals for kids. So, you know, essentially they want a certain quality of kid, and if they've got the kid and they admit him, they're going to find a way to make sure he affords it. So the opportunities for getting a discount on your college tuition and on everything else you pay are enormous. Lots of people get them, and so the sticker shock is based on a false presumption that the sticker is what you're actually going to pay.
Yeah, so I hear the position you're going to take on the next question I want to ask you. You know, I'm on the board of Princeton, and
yep,
we raise tuition every year 5 to 6%, even when inflation is at 1%. We're a $37,000 a year university, and I'm the only guy who stands up and says, don't do this, we shouldn't raise tuition. And here's the argument from the other side. They say, well, if we keep the tuition at $37,000, then Bill Gates is going to pay that, but most parents aren't, and we can use the money from the Bill Gateses of the world to finance financial aid for students from less wealthy families.
And
you buy that.
Didn't Princeton announce recently that they no longer will have loans? They'll just have grants?
Yeah, no loans. We have a lot of money, and we're using our loans. No loans. We're just going to get, if you can get in, we're going to give you the money so you can come. But still, at Princeton, 50%. Or 49% pay the full $37,000.
Well, you know, there's another argument, and I hesitate to raise it, but some people think that kids are more likely to take a college education seriously if they know it's costing a lot of money, and are less likely to party.
That's like that great argument, why should you pay a psychiatrist $200 an hour when a rabbi could do it for you for free, and you're more likely to take it seriously. Yeah, I guess if the kid knows how much mom and dad are paying, maybe she would take it more seriously.
I don't know if there's any research that buttresses that thesis.
Interesting thesis, yeah. Mm-hmm. The problem with your saying it is the universities are going to start saying it now, too. It's to their benefit that we charge $40,000.
But, I mean, the great thing about this country is if you are in reasonably good health and you speak, read and write English, you can get a great college education. Go to community college and get a job on the side. You can then transfer to a state university for relatively little money and make enough money on the side to get a fine degree. If you have those basics and the people who realize this don't live in this country. And the reason why we've got, 70,000 kids from China and another 70,000 from the subcontinent and all other countries, lots from Japan, as you know,
yes,
that they see what this our university system represents compared to their own little restricted, often difficult to get into universities back home. We've got, we're the golden, the holy grail of higher education in the world, and that's why they come here.
I know that, and what really bugs me, after we give them this great education and we let them live in this free country, do they go back to China or South Korea or wherever and, Moldova and say, boy, did I ever see a great democracy at work? No, they're out in the street demonstrating against America. Drives me crazy. But we see, and then you go up to these kids in the anti-globalization demo, and the kid says, yeah, I have a degree from UCLA. It was wonderful kind of thing. Now, what the next thing we have to get into is this very tricky and controversial area of early decision and early action, whether it's good for the students or good for the colleges or good for maybe just bad for everybody. We have to take another break for news here. We're going to have KNRC's Tim McLaughlin give the news, Jay, and then we'll be back to deal with those questions.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, some snow showers, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Pep Boys. Governor Bill Owens has signed the first bill of this year's legislative session. The measure seeks to reform the CAPCO program by creating a Colorado Venture Capital Authority. The new law requires 100% investment of funds for seed and early-stage businesses, unlike the CAPCO program. Doctors today performed an autopsy on the body of 46-year-old Rhonda Holland, who was murdered at a Littleton gift shop over the weekend. Results of
of the autopsy may not be available for up to a week. Investigators suspect robbery is the motive for the murder, but they're still putting together clues to support that theory. The Colorado Supreme Court deadlocked 3-3 today on a case involving school expulsions. That let stand a lower court ruling that said a student's rights were violated 4 years ago when the Jeffco schools wouldn't hold an expulsion hearing for a then 10th grade Golden High School student who was being expelled. In sports, the Denver Nuggets have an away game tonight against the Utah Jazz. Nuggets topped the Jazz earlier this month when they last played. Hurry into Pep Boys, where an express ProLine oil change is just $11.88. That's right, $11.88, and it's done in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. See store for details. Pep Boys, they're car people. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:37.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapaho Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy. Sell quality products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Napoleon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Napoleon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
KNRC News Time is 2:38. Time to check with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Continues to be a pretty quiet drive around town in spite of the road conditions and the snow and the slush that seem to be accumulating in places. One big problem downtown, though, it's an accident at 13th and Broadway. One of the vehicles involved there is an RTD bus, and there's still some minor slowing westbound on I-76 approaching Pecos Street because of an earlier accident. Good news if you're traveling on I-25 through the T-Rex project tonight. The planned closure of I-25 from Santa Fe down to Hamden won't be needed because crews managed to get the demolition of the southern portion of the Hamden Avenue Bridge done last night. Did you know that Albertson's Pharmacy now gladly accepts workers' compensation prescriptions? It's just one more way the folks at Albertson's work with your needs in mind. I'm Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We should see pretty close to an inch of snow as the widely scattered snow showers continue on through late day into evening, finally tapering off after midnight tonight. We should get up to around 35 for the high today, 14 for the overnight low. And then we will see a little warming trend, mid-30s on Wednesday, back in the 40s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's cloudy. We've got some snow showers. Still 30 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
What's all the buzz in the suburbs? Find out by subscribing to Buzz in the Burbs magazine. If you're looking for all the best places to eat, shop, travel, and have fun with the family, you'll find it in Buzz in the Burbs, the original lifestyle magazine for Denver suburbs. Buzz in the Burbs is a terrific resource with a wealth of information on fashion, food, home, travel, health, education, local events, personalities, and more. Best of all, you can get the buzz delivered right to your door. If you're not on the mailing list, call Buzz in the Burbs at 303-689-7665 or visit www.buzzintheburbs.com now to subscribe. For just over $1 a month, you get all the buzz about your suburban community right in your mailbox every month. 40,000 active, affluent families rely on Buzz in the Burbs for great ideas on family living. For advertising information or to subscribe, call 303-689-7665 or check out the Buzz on the web at www.buzzintheburbs.com. Call 303-689-7665 today.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major indexes opened the holiday shortened trading week with a mixed bag. The Dow Industrials fell 72 points to 10,529. The Nasdaq rose 7.5 points to 2148. The S&P 500 lost a point to 1139. Big board volume was nearly 1.7 billion shares. Advancers beat decliners by nearly 5-3 margin. 3M, the Dow's biggest disappointment today, tumbling about 6%. 3M beat quarterly profit estimates, but had a slowdown in U.S. volume growth. Fellow Dow stocks, GM, Citigroup, United Technologies, and Johnson & Johnson also topped quarterly profit estimates, but only J&J was a winner, adding $1.05 a share. And Lucent Technologies was the day's busiest stock. It climbed 14 cents a share following an analyst upgrade. Once again on Wall Street, the Dow was down 72 points. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
Hi, Colorado. We're back. It's T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein. And as I said, we're talking to America's leading expert on college admissions, Jay Matthews, the author of the fantastically informative and I think wise book, Harvard Schmarvard, which is aimed at college, high school students and their parents who are facing this very difficult process. Jay, let's talk somewhat about the mechanics of college admission. Would you explain for us the decision, the differences, I mean, between the early decision, the sort of regular decision, and rolling decision, I think it's called?
Sure. And keep in mind that these kinds of devices for forcing kids to choose early really only apply to about 20% of schools. And keep further in mind that it's only about 10% of schools that don't accept just about everybody who applies. So, you know, we're talking
about... You mean 90% of the colleges, if you apply, you're going to get in.
You're going to get in with very few exceptions. So for selective schools have figured out that they can control their intake of kids and make it more likely that the kids they accept will come to their colleges, which is something they like, controls their admissions by having systems that give the kid an opportunity to apply early. Essentially, usually if you submit your application by November 1st or sometimes November 15th of your senior year in high school, they will come back to you with an answer before Christmas of that senior year.
Okay.
Early decision is the most popular method for the colleges because it binds you at least morally to coming to the school if they let you in. So you, for instance, Princeton, you fly early decision to Princeton, and if Princeton comes back on December 15th and says, yeah, we'll take you, you are sort of morally obliged to go to Princeton. There's no legal bar against you going somewhere else.
But, well, have they had cases of somebody who gets in somewhere early decision and then cheats and goes down the road?
No, because usually, you know, it's the very rare kid who gets into his number one school, which the early decision school should be.
Yes, right.
And then thinks otherwise. In some case, and then if they don't decide to go, it's usually for a good reason. They can't afford it, something like that. So there's no case law on this that I'm aware of.
All right.
So that's early decision.
You
apply, you get in, you have to go there. That's binding.
Binding.
Early action is the same process, but it's not binding. For instance, Harvard and Yale now say, okay, you can apply to us. If we accept you, you're not committed to come here. You can continue to apply to other places in the regular pool and wait until April to see where else you get into before you decide to come here. Although Harvard, and I think Yale also says, I'm not sure about Yale, but Harvard says, but we don't want you to apply anywhere else early.
Yes, right.
Even though we're giving you this break.
Yeah.
And then finally, rolling admission, which is what lots of state universities do, particularly popular ones like Indiana, in which you apply anytime you want. You can apply in November, and they will, you know, keep kids on sort of a rolling system. So if you apply in November, you'll hear back from December. If you apply in December, you'll hear back in January. It's a more fluid kind of situation.
Yeah.
And in those cases, that's also not binding. So you can take that acceptance and put it in your pocket and wait until April to see who else takes you and then make up your decision by May 1st.
Yeah, got it. But didn't you wrote that the big shot colleges, Harvard and Stanford, are sort of doing a version of rolling admission by sending a letter saying we're probably going to let you in?
Oh, yeah. This is the likely letter.
The likely letter, yes.
The range of marketing devices used by, you know, schools that you think of as just austere institutions is remarkable. The first marketing device that I should underline, because I think it is in many ways unethical and wrong, is the search letter,
okay,
which is in your junior year,
junior in high school.
Sophomore year, you will send to kids who get good scores on the PSAT test.
Yep.
A letter that says, gosh, if they get a high score, or if they're a minority or have some other talent you want, gosh, we loved you, we think you're the kind of person we want at our school. And it goes on extolling first you as a person who would merit getting this letter, and secondly, the school. Almost in no cases do these letters say, of course, you know, this isn't an offer of admission. It's still hard to get into our school. We just want you to apply. So that gives the kid this false hope. You know, he gets a...
And you've
Yale
talked Arnold, to a lot of kids who got this and got shafted.
A letter that sent the kid a Yale decal with Handsome Dan, the Yale Bulldog, put on their car. And, you know, could say, well, I got the decal from Yale. You know, I must. And many of these kids are unsophisticated. Their parents haven't gone to college, and they think this is a...
It's a done deal.
Appeal. So
yeah.
So that's very deceptive. The likely letter is something different. If you apply in the regular pool in, you say, January, if the college sees somebody they really like, so instead of waiting until, you know, April 1st to send you the usual letter, and you get your letter from this college same time you get your letter from Harvard, Yale, they'll send you a letter in February that says, you know, we can't really admit you now, but it's very likely that we will admit you. I think Chelsea Clinton got one of those.
I would bet,
Harvard.
Yes. Yeah.
And but she still decided to go to Stanford. So that's part of the game.
Are there any data on this? Are there people who everybody gets a likely letter gets in eventually? Or
yes.
Yeah.
The likely letter means you're going to get in.
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't they just go to rolling admission?
Well, that's a very good question. There's a really funny, wise guy named Cliff Sogren, who's a former admissions dean at Michigan and USC, who sent me this manifesto he had written. I made a column out of it in which he suggested that very thing, that everybody should go to a form of rolling admission. We get rid of a lot of the legacies and the accoutrements, and you know, admit everybody, you know, when you get the letter or not, and then let everybody wait until May 1st to make up their decision. It would be much more sensible and less angst-ridden, and he's right. And perhaps we will move to... I thought that the reaction against early decision, which we've seen in the last 2 years, might spread a little bit. We had several educators, particularly high school educators, and some people in the college, to say, you know, this early decision binding the kid in December to the school he picked before his, you know, on his senior year is really harmful. We're forcing kids to decide too soon. They do it because they think, you know, if they need to grab something earlier, they won't get into good college. And it's really harmful to low-income kids and minorities who need to wait until they see a number of different offers to see who's going to give them the best financial aid.
Offer.
So
yeah.
The president of Yale, Dr. Levin, said, well, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to switch back to early action. And a few other schools, Stanford, North Carolina at Chapel Hill, said, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to get rid of this binding and go to early action. But the ball stopped rolling at that point, and I don't see much of a groundswell here. It's very, very useful to the colleges to have a binding early decision program because it allows them to figure out, you know, who they've got in their class. It allows them to pick and choose in a way that they don't usually have. And they argue, and the best argument is Lee Stetson, who's the admissions dean at Pennsylvania, Penn, says, you know, with binding early decision, I have a lot of happy kids on my campus.
Who wanted to be there.
Yeah, who wanted to be there. I get to know which ones I'm really the first choice. And, you know, I bind them to the decision, but they're telling me that I'm number one on their list, and I think that makes a big difference in the morale of the students on my campus, that there's so many happy kids here. And that
as
he has
opposed to Penn being the fallback for kids who didn't get into Harvard or Brown or something.
Yes. Can't wait for you to try that one on Lee.
Yeah, well... I can definitely, he might be right. It's certainly in the university's interest to have early decision. And as a result, aren't they taking about half the class now in December?
Yeah, places like Harvard. I'm not sure what the Princeton figures are, but it's very large. It's half at Harvard.
Half at Princeton this year. Yeah.
It's some places it's 20 or 30%. It's a lot of kids.
Is it still, from the point of view of the applicant, you still have a better shot, a better percentage chance to get in if you apply early?
You do. Some of these schools deny that you do.
But you can see it in the numbers.
And my friend Bob Samuelson, who's a columnist for Newsweek and the Washington Post, whose child, like mine, was in this hunt last year, did a column steaming with indignation because there were studies that showed that indeed you had an advantage at Harvard, you know, 100 to 200 point SAT point advantage getting in if you applied early, and Harvard continued to deny it.
Yeah, but I think it's definitely there.
And most places like Penn will say it up front, yeah, you have an advantage if you apply early, and most other places will sort of make it clear that you do.
So you're kind of suggesting here, and I think you do, I don't know if you suggest this in your book, but for our high school juniors who are listening, well, we hope they're in high school right now, but if their parents are listening, if they can hit on a first choice, they'd be smarter to apply early.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure about your kids, but my three kids, two applied early to private schools and got in, and that was good for them. They only applied to one school, and my middle child applied to several schools and got into Berkeley Rolling Admission, and that's the one he took.
Yeah, right. Mine basically didn't do that, but our youngest did apply for the early action where you're allowed to change your mind. And I have to say, from the university's point of view, it worked perfectly because as soon as she got the letter from Georgetown, it was over. She wasn't going to apply anywhere else.
It makes some sense for a lot of kids. Now, the high schools complain that this system helps ruin the latter part of the senior year.
Yeah, because they're in and they goof off,
and,
you mean.
And, you know, I'm doing a book about the International Baccalaureate Program, which is this wonderful program. High schools gives them very college-level tests. But one of the kids I was conferring with, who had gotten, who was in an IB school in Northern Virginia, said, you know, I got into Washington Lee University in January of my senior year, and I got a full scholarship, and I decided, you know, I didn't need to get the full IB diploma. So I didn't like French, so I just
and the IB is hard.
And he 3 years later, he's telling me I very much regretted that. You know,
yeah,
it would have been a great thing on my record. It was something I'm proud of to get that. It's not something I might do, but, you know, since I was getting in, there was really no motive, and that's a problem.
You know, amid the discussion of affirmative action and whether we ought to have affirmative action on racial or ethnic grounds, came up the question of affirmative action on family grounds, that is, legacies, people like George W. Bush, who went to the same college as their father and grandfather, and there may be many more Bushes who went to Yale, for all I know. This is now a controversial issue, is it not?
It is, and it's fascinating. I didn't realize this was going to happen. Schools like Berkeley and University of Georgia and now Texas A&M declared that they were no longer going to have affirmative action admissions. It didn't matter whether or not what race you were. That wasn't going to be considered anymore.
Yes.
And it became immediately clear to them that if they didn't give preference to race, then they could no longer, in good conscience, give preference for the children of their alumni. So they stopped doing that also. And it's created, a lot of controversy.
Is this a spreading movement, do you think?
Again?
Harvard ever get there?
I severely doubt it. It's another one of these little trends that if anywhere, it's moving very slowly. And the schools that use legacies say, and I think they're so vehement about it that it's unlikely that they're going to change. Yeah, sure. That's, you know, if you want to, if this appeals to your sense of social justice, go ahead. But look at the money situation.
Yes.
We only through tuition, you know, get about 60% of the costs.
Yeah.
There's an enormous amount of money that we get from alumni, and if you're denying us a chance to motivate those alumni to give to our school, then you're going to have to find this money some other place. They go on to make the even more telling argument. Well, listen, nobody thinks it's unfair for state universities to give a preference in their admissions to in-state students because they're paying the bills through taxes. So why should we, private schools, not have a chance to give a preference to our alumni who are paying far more than the tuition? They're paying all this extra money that they contribute to the school.
I hear you.
That's a good argument.
Now, of course, we got to pay bills again for a minute. Please stay on, Jay, and we'll be back in just about a minute. This is T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein on 1150 KNRC.
Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC.
This week on Colorado State of Mind, The Emmy-winning series asks, should we stop using animals for entertainment? An Arvada High School student has proposed that Denver pass a law banning the display of all wild or exotic animals. The ban would eliminate these animals in parades, carnivals, photo shoots, and circuses. The Denver Zoo, Ocean Journey, and National Western Stock Show would not be affected. The student and animal rights activists say these animals are mistreated and abused, citing stories of severely injured circus animals to bolster their cause. Opponents of the ban say that laws exist to protect animals, and those laws just need to be enforced. They say the ban would only force the circus to visit other cities, taking the millions of dollars of revenue it generates elsewhere. Tune in Friday night at 8:30 for a lively discussion on Colorado State of Mind on Rocky Mountain PBS Channel 6. And join the discussion anytime online at rmpbs.org. Don't miss Colorado State of Mind every Friday night only on Rocky Mountain PBS.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Are drugs affecting you, your family, or a friend? Narcanon provides answers to drug addiction. They offer free assessment and referral services to over 11,000 treatment centers nationwide. For 30 years, Narcanon has successfully used a drug-free approach to long-term recovery that works. They understand the cravings, guilt, and depression associated with addiction. To find out more about Narcanon, log on to www.stopaddiction.com or call 1-800-468-6933. Start the new year by eating and feeling good at Subway. Try Subway's new Atkins-friendly carb-controlled wraps. Savor the flavor of the turkey bacon melt or chicken bacon ranch. Atkins-friendly wraps, now at Subway.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of Her Majesty Queen Noor on January 20th, retired General Tommy Franks on March 30th, and Steve Forbes on May 17th. Tickets start at only $50 for the 3-lecture package and are on sale now. Go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Dominic Brascia.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Hi, but of course it's not Enid Goldstein. It's T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid. And I am such a klutz at talk radio, Jay, that I only left enough time to say thank you and goodbye. Jay Matthews, our guest, is the author of Harvard Schmarvard, a really absolute required reading, I think, for anybody getting involved in the process of college admissions. Jay, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, T.R.
So long. And I just want to say again, people out there, we are the, you and I, ordinary peons, klutzes like us, are the people who get to choose the most powerful person on the planet because we live in a democracy. And this process essentially started yesterday with the Ohio caucuses. The Republican candidate, George W. Bush, is going to get the chance to lay out his campaign plan, campaign program tonight in his State of the Union address. It's then our duty to pick the best person to lead the most powerful nation in the history of the world. We've got to do this job, so please be there tonight and watch the president and carefully make your choice for the next president. T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC. Thank you.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon, cloudy skies, still some scattered snow showers, 30 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Quaker Oatmeal. A bill to reform the CAPCO program, Colorado's failed venture capital program, became the first bill of the 2004 legislature that Governor Bill Owens signed. Signing the bill today, Owens said reforming the CAPCO program has been a joint effort among legislators.
The bill was sponsored by Senator Norma Anderson, Representative Fran Coleman, and I greatly appreciate their help. As you can see, there is bipartisan support for this program.
Denver Democratic Representative Fran Coleman, a co-sponsor of the bill, says she was inspired to help create the reform bill after seeing how the CAPCO program and its money was being abused.
I also was very concerned, especially about using the money for lobbying
And secondly, the profits for taxes. When you get government money and then you use government money to pay your government bills, that's a problem.
The bill, which has enjoyed bipartisan support, follows a report by the state auditor saying that Capco companies have spent nearly $500,000 on lobbying fees. The governor today also weighed in on yesterday's Iowa caucuses.
No, Senator Kerry did well. I was surprised by Senator Edwards coming in a very strong second.